idea Lord Mandelson failed his security vetting as he fires a top civil servant to take the blame. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with all the latest.
Are we really to believe that they went ahead with that despite failed clearance? The first interview with a senior member of the government in just a few minutes' time. In other news, the war of words continue. Pope Leo in Cameroon.
The world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants, yet is held together by a multitude of supportive brothers and sisters.
And in a related story, the Israeli Prime Minister confirms that there is a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon, but how long will it hold? Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the civil servant in charge of the Foreign Office is to leave his post after he cleared Peter Mandelson to be US ambassador despite failing vetting. LBC understands Sir Keir Starmer has lost confidence in Sir Ollie Robbins after failing to inform him of the security issue. Dame Emily Thornberry is the Labour MP who chairs the Foreign Affairs Select Committee. She says she feels misled by the civil servants that she questioned initially about the appointment.
When you're told that there's due process, you think that it means something. I'm told, for example, in this, Peter Mandelson's security vetting was conducted to the usual standard set for developed vetting in line with established Cabinet Office policy. But it doesn't say it was overridden. What I'm saying is that people have basically been telling us half the story. People have been taking the mickey.
Opposition parties are calling for Sir Keir Starmer to resign, but Number 10 says he was only made aware of the revelations on Tuesday. The Shadow Business Secretary, Andrew Griffith, has told LBC the explanation's not good enough.
What sort of Number 10 operation was he running if there were people that felt that they would make this decision without even consulting him? What's been going on in the Foreign Office? What about all of the advisers that work directly to him, that he is the boss of and directly accountable for?
Sir Keir Starmer is expected to give a statement on the issue in the House of Commons on Monday. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. In other news this morning, a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon has come into effect. The truce, brokered by the United States, could ease negotiations to end the conflict with Iran. The total cost of compensating victims of major scandals, including Windrush and infected blood, could reach £15 billion. A report by the spending watchdog says less than a quarter has been paid so far, with many victims still facing long waits. Research suggests 4 in 5 workers have faced abuse or violence at work in the last year. A survey by the TUC found over half of frontline staff experience weekly threats or physical assaults. The union says many workers now accept it as part of the job. Ministers say their changes to the Crimes Bill aims to make the assault of a retail worker a new specific offence in England and Wales. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,589. It closed up 30 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK through Friday. The southeast remaining dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mum!
Here's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after seven, Friday, April the 17th. There are many other stories to come to, but let's get to one now. There's developments have broken almost overnight as well, which we now know that despite failing this clearance, the appointment of Peter Mandelson as our ambassador went ahead. So let's bring straight into the conversation Darren Jones. Mr. Jones is Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. Grateful for your time. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Can I ask you, when the Prime Minister said at a press conference concerning the vetting, quotes, vetting carried out independently by the security services, which is an intensive exercise that gave him, Mandelson, clearance for the role, was he lying or being utterly incompetent?
Good morning, Nick. What the Prime Minister was referring to was the process that allowed the Foreign Office to overrule the recommendation put to them by UK security vetting to appoint Peter Mandelson as ambassador to the United States. When I found out about this yesterday afternoon, I was out in Southampton campaigning with colleagues for the local elections when the Guardian story broke. I immediately came back to London, and what became very clear to me was this was not just an individual case in relation to Peter Mandelson, but the very fact that the Foreign Office and a small number of other organisations have the right to overrule a recommendation from UK security vetting not to appoint someone to a sensitive post because of security concerns is quite frankly astonishing. So I took the immediate decision last night to suspend the right for all of those organisations, including the Foreign Office, to do so. And I've commissioned an urgent review to understand how often this behaviour has taken place across government.
So who overrode the vetting system, Mr. Jones?
The Foreign Office had the right to overrule the recommendation put to it by UK security vetting not to appoint Peter Mandelson as ambassador. When the Foreign Office chose to overrule that advice, DV clearance, the vetting clearance had been cleared and Peter Mandelson was allowed to be appointed to the role.
And you're asking the nation to believe all this went on blissful ignorance from the Prime Minister?
So the Prime Minister was not told about this until Tuesday evening this week, as I only found out about myself personally yesterday afternoon. But again, the fact that the process existed in the first place and that it did not require a department to notify ministers or indeed Number 10 that they had overruled the recommendation of UK security vetting is, as I say, is astonishing. It's completely unacceptable.
Having learnt on Tuesday, why has it effectively been forced out of him by the Guardian newspaper?
So the Prime Minister was told on Tuesday evening.
Yes.
And he then immediately asked the Cabinet Secretary to provide to him the full facts about what happened when and who took what decision so that the Prime Minister could update the House of Commons with that information.
No, but I ask you, why did he wait? Why a delay of almost 48 hours?
Because the information had not yet been fully assembled for him to be able to go to the House of Commons to make that statement. As you know, he's going to be giving a statement to the House of Commons on Monday.
Why Monday? A matter of this gravity. Why does it take until Monday, Mr. Jones?
But purely because Parliament is not sitting today because it's Friday, Nick. If the House was sitting today, the Prime Minister would be there this morning.
Well, surely he could make a statement from Number 10 or somewhere else.
I think it's important in these circumstances for the Prime Minister to make an address to the House of Commons.
Has Sir Ollie Robbins resigned or been fired?
He had lost the confidence of the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary, which is effectively a dismissal, and that's why he left his job as Permanent Secretary of the Foreign Office overnight.
So you're honestly expecting the nation to believe that Sir Ollie Robbins, who served with distinction for four Prime Ministers, in some way, shape or form, allowed clearance to go ahead, despite that knowledge? He worked for Theresa May, he worked for Tony Blair, he worked for Gordon Brown, he worked for David Cameron in senior roles, and someone with that level of responsibility decided for whatever reason to allow clearance. And you want the nation to buy that?
That is my understanding of the facts, but I agree with you. I'm astonished that that is the case.
What happens to him now?
Ollie Robbins?
Yes.
He's left his post as Permanent Secretary at the Foreign Office, so he returns to his private life.
You'll recall that in February there was this rather arcane process known as a humble address to compel the government to release all papers. When will those papers be released?
So the humble address has been a process that has required my department to go across government to summon documents that relate to the documents requested by the humble address. We've already published the first tranche of information. The second tranche of information is due to come before Parliament very soon. We're about to go into recess and prorogation with the King's Speech, but we're not far off of being able to publish the second tranche of information. When this information became available, the information that UK security vetting had recommended against his appointment, of course, legal advice was taken about being able to include that in the humble address, and we intend to do so once it's gone through the Met Police and the Intelligence and Security Committee.
Mr. Jones, the day before the Prime Minister said that Mandelson had clearance because he was supposedly blissfully unaware, he was asked in the House of Commons by Kemi Badenoch, did the official security vetting that he received mention Mandelson's ongoing relationship with the paedophile, Jeffrey Epstein? To which the Prime Minister replied, yes, it did. If so, why did he proceed?
So the Prime Minister in the House was referring to due diligence undertaken by the proprietary and ethics team in the Cabinet Office that is separate to the then enhanced security checks undertaken by UK security vetting. The documents that are put together by the security and vetting team are kept very, very tight because they contain deeply personal information about the individuals being scrutinised. They go through financial, personal, sexual, religious and other types of background information, and that is why it is kept extremely private on a portal that only a few people have access to. The Prime Minister was not given those documents because he would not routinely be given them about individuals' appointments.
When one of your senior colleagues, Dame Emily Thornberry, who chairs the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, says that MPs' quotes have been kept in the dark, people need to stop messing us about and tell us the truth. How embarrassing is that for you and your government, the government?
As I say, it's astonishing. And
no, I ask you if it's embarrassing, Mr. Jones.
It is, yeah. And the Prime Minister is furious about the fact that this...
Then why doesn't he come to the nation if he's so angry? Why must we wait until Monday?
Because the House will sit on Monday. And as I say, it's important, as Mr. Speaker and members of Parliament would expect, for the Prime Minister to address the House of Commons first.
Who said trust in politics is now so low, so degraded, nobody believes anyone can make a difference anymore? Do you recognise those comments?
I don't recognise them to be able to...
They came from Sir Keir Starmer 2 years ago. What's gone wrong?
Well, clearly there is a process that was in place that allowed the Foreign Office and other organisations to overrule the advice of UK security vetting. I put a stop to that immediately last night as soon as I became aware that that rule even existed in the first place. But it is the rule, that process, that has undermined the Prime Minister and the government because that was allowed to happen without notification to ministers.
What does this mean for the Prime Minister's future, Mr. Jones?
I don't think it brings the Prime Minister's future into question because he only found
out about
it.
You and I have known each other for some time. You honestly think that people will not be waking up this morning, reading their papers, listening to this radio show, thinking, what on earth is going on with this man who told us there would be a new trust in politics? And he pretends he didn't know. Well, we must take his word. And he somehow allowed clearance to go ahead.
I think the public, as much as the Prime Minister, as well as myself when I found out about this yesterday afternoon, have asked exactly the question, what on earth has gone on in this situation? There is no question that it was unacceptable. There is no question that it was unacceptable, not just in relation to Peter Mandelson, but the fact that this process was even allowed to exist, not just in the Foreign Office, but a small number of other organisations as well. And it's quite frankly astonishing that this was allowed to be taken as a decision by the Foreign Office without making reference, at least to the Foreign Secretary, but of course the Prime Minister in the circumstances of a political appointment of this nature.
But you'll know better than I, Security Vetting SV is part of the Cabinet Office. No minister was told that Mandelson had failed. No minister.
That's my understanding. UK security vetting is a process housed by the Cabinet Office, but the advice is given to the sponsoring department. So the advice was given to the Foreign Office, which the Foreign Office then chose to overrule.
I come back to the idea then. Sir Ollie Robbins, who was Principal Private Secretary to Tony Blair, Cabinet Office for Gordon Brown, serving as David Cameron's Deputy National Security Advisor, Theresa May's Brexit negotiator, someone with this level of experience, decides to effectively change all the clearance. It is preposterous, Mr. Jones.
As the Foreign Office took the decision to ignore the recommendation, and as I'm told, this is not an individual case in relation to the use of this rule. It's happened in other circumstances, which is why I have asked the department to urgently tell me how often this rule has been used to allow departments to ignore the recommendation of UK security vetting.
You're nothing if not a thorough man. I've known you for some time. Why did he fail the vetting?
I have not seen the documents in question. They have not been shared with me. As I say, these documents are often deeply personal in their information. So I can't...
Do you know why he failed the vetting?
I can't tell you the detail of...
I understand that, and it's possibly legally you can't as well. But do you know...
I've not seen the forms, and I cannot tell you why they came to the conclusion they came to.
No, but do you know? So you don't know why he failed the vetting?
All I know, and all that I can tell you, is that they concluded to recommend against his appointment because of concerns through the process.
So this blows up. You're very close to the Prime Minister. You two have a conversation, and neither of you know why he failed the vetting.
I have not seen the vetting documents. No.
Well, wouldn't you ask? For the love of God, Keir, what the hell has happened here? What have we got wrong? And no one's thought to ask what it is?
Sure, Nick, I have asked the question, but the documents are currently going through legal processes, and I'm
But
not...
you do know, but you can't share it with the listeners, is that right?
No, I've not seen them.
We still don't know why Lord Peter Mandelson failed.
I'm not allowed to see those documents at this point in time. No.
Can you give me a level, a metric of the Prime Minister's anger when you spoke with him?
I mean, it's hard to describe, quite frankly. I mean, I've used the word furious, but it's of a bigger scale. As I say, not just because of the...
Well, do expand.
Well...
When you say a big... I mean, presumably, some pretty fruity language I'd ask you not to repeat, Mr. Jones.
Well, exactly. I'm not going to add more colour, but given the nature of the problem here, not just in terms of the appointment, but the position that it has put the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers in as a consequence of the decision to overrule the recommendation from UK security vetting, and the fact that the system even allowed for that to happen in the first place. I mean, it's of a scale of a problem that we've not experienced in government before. It is beyond unacceptable, and it is right that you, your listeners, the Parliament, as well as I and other ministers, I'm not just astonished by the fact that this could happen in the first place, but need to take action to make sure it cannot happen ever again.
Last question, and this is the political side. Whether or not he's lost the trust of the nation, only time will tell. But Kemi Badenoch, Sir Ed Davey and others say that he has misled the House, which obviously, as you know better than anyone, is a very grave offence. Do you recognise that? Has Sir Keir misled the House?
No, I don't agree that he has misled the House, and I think any scrutiny of his statements to the House will show that that has not been the case.
But he did say on a number of occasions, full due process was followed during this appointment, as it is with all ambassadors. As I say, due process was gone through in relation to this appointment. Mm-hmm. Well, it was. He failed, but he still got the job. Well, dancing on the head of a pin here, aren't we, Mr. Jones?
But this is the nub of the problem. Due process was followed. But the fact that due process allowed for the Foreign Office to ignore the advice of UK security and vetting is astonishing.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Darren Jones, Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister and Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, giving us the full background. And I find it extraordinary we still won't hear from the man himself, possibly until Monday. Sitting in the studio with me, Natasha Clarke, LBC's political editor. Where does this take us?
Nick, it's going to be a long weekend for Downing Street. To get to that common statement, which we hear from Darren Jones, is going to be on Monday. But yes, you heard it there straight from the horse's mouth. The Prime Minister reportedly furious with this situation. Darren Jones telling you in that first interview, since this news all broke, we had a complete radio silence from the government on this yesterday, that he's now suspended the right for the Foreign Office to ever do such overruling ever again. He claims that his understanding was that no minister was told. I'm sure we're going to see scrutiny of all of these government claims over the next few days. He says the advice was given to the Foreign Office. Their story is that it is all down to the Foreign Office. It's all down to those officials, all down to Sir Ollie Robbins. He is the man being thrown under the bus for this whole sorry saga. Interesting, I thought also the final thing that Darren Jones said to you there about that legal advice. It sounds like the government wants to release those vetting documents so that the public and us can all see exactly what's happened, exactly what's gone wrong here. If the government indeed give that green light, it'll be astonishing to see those documents, don't
it? Natasha Clarke, LBC's political editor, come to your views on that in just a moment. But again, yesterday, not just covering the news, but making the news with this interview with Health Secretary, taking your calls, Wes Streeting.
It's got to come from
somewhere.
Would you
support it coming from the burgeoning welfare budget?
Well, we want to reduce the welfare budget.
Swapping, of course, the welfare budget into the defence budget. We'll look into that in more detail. It's 7:17, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has told Nick it's completely unacceptable that the Foreign Office overruled a security vetting recommendation to appoint Peter Mandelson as US Ambassador. Darren Jones has confirmed to LBC that the top civil servant who made that decision, Ollie Robbins, has left his post. Opposition parties are calling for Sir Keir Starmer to resign over the issue, but Number 10 says he was only made aware of the revelation on Tuesday. LBC weather, rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Twickenham, the Chertsey Road is closed westbound at St Margaret's Roundabout, and that's following an accident. Very slow on the South Circular Road westbound from the Tulse Hill Gyratory to Streatham Hill, and that's because of roadworks where only one lane is open. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover, and that's because of the ongoing works. So definitely do expect delays again this morning, especially on the M4 and the A4. On the trains, LNER services are disrupted to and from King's Cross following an investigation. Thames Link Heart running northbound between Hitchin and Biggleswade because a train's broken down, and also delays between St Pancras and Luton. And also on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Northern Line.
This is LBC.
Get that EuroMillions feeling with Friday's £114 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's EuroMillions jackpot is £114 million and 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home. That was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
I...
No, forget that.
Never,
you
just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:21, the first interview with a very senior member of the government, effectively, really, with the right-hand man, Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, who will take your response to that. So many questions, by the way. We really believe this career civil servant would jeopardise his future? I went through the jobs he enjoyed under four other Prime Ministers, all of whom played trust in him, but we are led to believe that suddenly he decided to effectively say that to mislead us all about Mandelson's clearance. Quickly, the front pages, well, a lot of this developed last night, so it can't be reflected. I mean, the Daily Mail says, Mandelson's lies, that's in quotes, are exposed. The Guardian, we must pay tribute or credit to them, credit where credit is due, revealed Mandelson failed security vetting for US role, and the Daily Telegraph, a picture of a very worried-looking Starmer. Starmer accused of misleading Parliament over Mandelson. All of those, of course, before the sacking, I think we can say that now, of Sir Ollie Robbins, that key Mandarin. All details, of course, on the LBC app and the LBC website. Let's get to your reaction. I mean, the biggest one to me is a crisis of this magnitude, and I appreciate he's got something arranged, and I think it's Paris he's going to meet with Emmanuel Macron. I would suggest you sit at number 10 and you give a quick statement about this, but let's see what you make of it. Guy Cleethorpes, you're on the radio. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Nick. Slightly calmed down from the conversation with your colleague.
Shouting at him or her? I hope not, poor soul.
I was ranting, and he had to sort of say, just hang on a minute.
it's not his fault.
I don't believe a word of
it. I'm afraid
this man blames process for every bad decision he makes. If he knew about this on Tuesday, what has he been doing on Wednesday and Thursday?
Well, they wanted to establish the full facts, and he wanted to get the full brief. I mean, you heard it from his right hand man, Guy. What would you say? Well, let me put it this way: are we looking at game over for Keir Starmer?
We should be, but he's not somebody that's going to take his own poison. And to be honest, I don't see anyone doing anything before the May elections. The lying through the teeth. I mean, what is the incentive for the Foreign Office, the head of the Foreign Office, who's, like you say, has had some very senior jobs.
Very senior roles.
What is his incentive to take a unilateral decision to ignore the recommendation and tell absolutely nobody? It's just not credible. Absolutely not credible.
Guy, thanks for getting us started. Have yourself a good weekend in Cleethorpes. Thank you. Nick in Newbury. Nick, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Very good morning to you, my friend. Well, I'm absolutely astonished by this story because Starmer consistently is found to be dishonest, and the whole business here is causing the government, the English look at what's going on when he went to America and met up with the president, who looks at, you've seen those photographs of him being looked at by the president, who thinks he's an absolute absolute clown. I mean, I cannot understand how this saga has gone on as long as it has, and now somebody else, of course, has to take the penalty and fall on their own sword. The man has been so inconsistent, tied up with all kinds of wrong and areas. Doesn't matter whether it's to do with this, but he's a real worry. How is he allowed to be consistently employed?
Well, because of course he did win the general election. He is a leader of the Labour Party, Nick. But the key will be whether he's misled the House. And I have to say, having carefully read what he said to the House, as opposed to what he said to journalists in Hastings, and that is the key, I would argue, Nick, he will still be in position. Thank you. Have a good weekend. Sean in Tavistock. Hello, Sean. What do you make of it? Good to have you on Sport. Hope you're well.
Good morning, Nick. Very well, thank you. And to your listeners. I think McSweeney's all over this, Nick.
And they've still not found that phone, amazingly, Sean.
Well, that's true. But I watched in Thornbury last night, being interviewed on Sky News, and he said somebody closely associated with Starmer. It's him. So he's overruled Ollie Robinson because he wanted his mate Mandelson to get the top job. And Starmer knew all about this, Nick. He knew all about it. Starmer is a registered barrister. He should not be telling lies like this. When he goes to Parliament, and before he can't hide behind parliamentary privilege, he's a registered barrister. He knew full well. He gave the instruction to McSweeney to validate Mandelson's promotion. Yep.
Well, it does look that way. And if we've said anything, of course, that's wrong, we would urge Sakir or any of his team to ring him, because that's very much how it feels. And as you say, Dame Emily Thornbury, one of the first to put the boot in, effectively. Sean, thank you for that. 7:26. Now, I said earlier, we weren't just covering the news, we were making the news yesterday with this interview. Health Secretary Wes Streeting coming in as part of the exclusive call to Cabinet on LBC. And I asked him about following an email or a caller, actually, I think it was Hugh. Hugh, in Battersea, whether we would start shifting more money to the defence budget away from the so-called welfare budget.
We definitely want to reduce the welfare budget.
So should it go to defence, Mr. Streeting?
Well, I think it was for the Chancellor to set out her budget, I want to make sure I stay in my lane, but just to say that when the Chancellor is making decisions, I have no doubt, both from the judgments she's made and also from the evidence that we're confronted with, that defence will be much higher on her list of priorities than many of her predecessors. She's shown
and
that already through her choices.
And it could come from the burgeoning welfare budget, lastly.
Well, it's got to come from
would you
somewhere.
Would you support it coming from the burgeoning welfare budget?
Well, we want to reduce the welfare budget.
To Dr. Chris Newton, military historian, defence analyst, former defence policy advisor of the Conservative Party. And on that aspect, I wonder, Doctor, can I put it to you, and you're closer to this than I am, but in the past, defence has never rated that highly. It's health, and it's obviously the economy, and it's maybe your kids' schools. Do you see defence coming up the league table at quite a pace? Doctor, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Especially over the past sort of 20 or so years, defence has never been sort of a priority.
It's not a vote winner, really, is it, in all honesty?
It's not seen as a vote winner. And if you look at the YouGov polls, which, you know, ranks sort of issues, the importance of issues according to the public, is usually at the lower end. But interestingly, what we see in recent months and the more recent YouGov polls is that of defence is rising, and it's becoming one of the top three or four issues. So, and that might be because there's a war on at the moment, but also we have, you know, the situation with Russia and the riff with Trump and so forth. So I suspect that, yes, the economy, health will continue to be the biggest issues. Defence is increasingly up there, and it should be up there.
I had to virtually prize it out of the Health Secretary yesterday, but it looks as though more money will be diverted to defence by the Chancellor. Will it come out of the welfare budget, do you imagine?
Well, if you look at the different departments and what they spend, there's really two glaring departments which come to the fore. Mm. We spend around about $64 billion on defence. Health is over $200 billion, and welfare is over $300 billion and approaching $400 billion. So in terms of looking at the departments, welfare has to be a prime candidate, which I know to some of your listeners might not be a good thing, but we need to pay to defence, and welfare is a massive budget, and we need to rebalance our spending so that we prioritise security more.
Doctor, thank you. Chris Newton, you're a military historian, defence analyst and former defence policy advisor of the Conservative Party. Of course, this would rely on Sir Keir Starmer and others going on the offence over defence, or offence over defence. When you recall, they tried those relatively minor adjustments to the welfare bill last year, and they were seen off by some of their Labour colleagues. Let's go elsewhere. President Trump outside the White House yesterday.
With Lebanon, it's very exciting. I think we're going to have a deal. We're going to have a meeting, first time in 44 years. And Lebanon will be meeting with Israel, and they're probably going to do it at the White House.
Plus, back to your reaction to that interview with, effectively, the Prime Minister's right-hand man, Darren Jones, his chief secretary. And in the world of business... ...of course, from rivals, why some TV firms are steaming over streaming royalties. More after this. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. Let's get some news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has told LBC it's unacceptable that Lord Mandelson's vetting process was overruled by the Foreign Office. It emerged last night that the PO was cleared to take up the role of US ambassador despite failing a security report. Darren Jones has also confirmed to Nick that the top civil servant who made that decision, Ollie Robbins, has left his post. Opposition parties are calling for Sir Keir Starmer to resign over the issue, though, but Number 10 says he was only made aware of the revelations on Tuesday. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. One other story, a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon has come into effect. The truce brokered by the US could ease negotiations to end the conflict with Iran. LBC weather, a band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK. The southeast will stay dry, a high of 16 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
How many times do we have to sit and listen to another report or inquiry that says the multi-agency that all failed, all passed the buck, thought, no, it doesn't quite fall under our remit. But I'm sorry, multiple occasions when this kid is turning up at school with a knife and the police don't seem to do anything. They didn't even arrest him. They found him on a bus with a knife, didn't arrest him. Forget it. And nothing will really change.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course. When you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Hello, beautiful people. Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7.33, no shortage, of course, of reaction coming into that interview. Heard Darren Jones, I think it's the first media interview. Alan, you'll be the next caller on that. Sir Keir Starmer reportedly on the brink. Did he mislead the House? I don't think he did, if you read the comments carefully that he said in the House. Did he mislead the public? Yes, because he said in Hastings in February that he had had clearance. Just to read you that again. Security vetting carried out independently by the security services, which is an intensive exercise that gave him clearance for the role. No, it didn't, him being Lord Peter Mandelson. Right, World of Business now. Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB, joins me, and grounded, possibly, some aircraft. What's going on? Kathleen, good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yes, it's the war in Iran again. The head of the world's energy watchdog has now made like some pretty dire predictions, actually, saying that jet fuel could run out in 6 weeks across Europe. So we keep hearing about the peace talks, but the problem is the Strait of Hormuz remains closed. For example, in the UK, we get two-thirds of our jet fuel from the Middle East. So this is where kind of the problems are lying. We're running out of the stuff. It's not just us. The Asia could be hit first. But the International Energy Watchdog is saying that, you know, essentially what it means is some of the less popular flights could be cancelled over the summer months.
Yep.
And we already spoke earlier this week about how smaller airports could be impacted first. And we're also seeing Virgin Atlantic. They've already added a surcharge to economy customers of £50. And more than £300 if you're traveling lucky enough to travel business class. Airlines could also make more unexpected stopovers. So you might find that you turn up to check in and actually you've got to stop off for more fuel over the summer months as well. So it could be super disruptive for people who are kind of waiting. But, you know, the effects are all to be seen. EasyJet have said that just in March, their costs rose by £25 million.
Lord. Right, yeah. Time to list some hit shows that many of the listeners will love. Shows such as Rivals, The Crown, Slow Horses. But 145 filmmakers are angry about something called lifeblood royalties. What does that mean, Kathy?
Yeah. So that's when directors have in the past got paid royalties for the shows that they produce and, you know, how many times they're repeated. So obviously on these streamers, it's huge. It's absolutely, a lot of money that they're actually missing out on because streamers like Amazon, like Netflix, like Disney, they haven't signed up to that lifeblood royalty program. Now, this compares to the BBC and Sky who have. So if directors make programs for those companies, then they get a portion of the royalties. It's actually quite a small portion, but this is quite a precarious industry for filmmakers. Yeah. So it really can be important for them. So, the letter basically says that, you know, they're very grateful for everything that the streamers are doing for the UK TV and industry. We and film industry, we hear about that all the time. But it also makes a quite cutting remark that they're very, very quick to take our tax incentives to film over here and create studios over here. But they have absolutely dragged their feet on this one and it's taken years and they still haven't. They've been operating here for over 10 years and they still haven't signed up to this. So a lot of very angry directors out there.
Time to spread the news. A reprieve for a rather tangy delicacy. I'm afraid it doesn't work for me, Kathleen. I speak of, though,
gentleman's relish.
That's right.
Nick. I don't think I'm gentlemanly enough really to have tried it, but it was set, it's 200 years old. It was set to be abolished, because it's essentially, I don't think you're the only one who doesn't like it. It was real, no longer commercially.
Well, I was gonna say it's Marmite. I don't want to confuse listeners, but it's a love or loathe it, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an anchovy paste, traditionally spread on hot toast, but it's not going to be toast anymore because AB Foods, which own it, they were going to cancel it, but this caused absolute outrage because there are some really hardcore fans out there. Even Michelin star chefs came out in support of it. Nigella Lawson is another big fan of it, and they said, "No, you can't just stop this. This is a British delicacy, as British as Worcestershire sauce." Some of them are saying. So now they've said that they're going to look into other options. So it's going to be saved, but maybe you don't mind too much about that, Nick.
I don't. But anyway, if people enjoy it and maybe it'll keep folk in work who make it, then we celebrate anything like that. Kathleen, thank you. Have a good weekend. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. We will come to more of your calls. Alan, John, you're in line for your views of Keir Starmer, but because of the extraordinary gravity of its position in which Sir Keir finds himself, we've actually managed to get to nearly 7:38 without really mentioning this man.
We just made a deal with Lebanon. As of 2 hours from now, we have a ceasefire with Israel and Lebanon, and that'll be great. And they'll be meeting, probably coming to the White House over the next 4 or 5 days.
Happy
and that'll be the first time they've met in 44 years.
which is pretty unneighborly when considering their neighbors, but there's a really good chance that that'll work out with Lebanon and Israel.
As we often say on these occasions, why he couldn't come 20 yards away from the helicopter, we have no idea, but battling with the rotor blades in the background. What is the reality on the ground? Oliver Marsden, who's Middle East correspondent at The Observer, joining us from Beirut. OK, what is the reality as it's seen in Lebanon? Good morning, Oliver.
Good morning. Well, right now, the ceasefire came into effect last night at about midnight. There has been, on the whole, there has been peace. The ceasefire is holding. There were reports of the Israeli military shelling certain towns in southern Lebanon. Hezbollah has not fired back. That seems to have calmed down. There was celebratory gunfire across Beirut last night, even the firing of RPGs in celebration, which didn't leave for a very good night's sleep.
I can imagine.
But even so, people were up early and families have been, you know, packing up their cars because 1.2 million people have been displaced in this round of the conflict. So they've started heading south again. It's unclear whether they're going to go home and stay home or whether they're going home to check on their homes to see if they still exist, maybe pick up some belongings and come back to Beirut, because the army and Hezbollah and Nabi Berri, the Speaker of Parliament here in Lebanon, did warn residents of the south not to return. The Israeli military has stayed in South Lebanon, and Netanyahu did say, you know, this is a ceasefire, but we're not going anywhere. We are staying in our positions in South Lebanon. So that is the situation on the ground. The people are still heading south, and some of these bridges that have been destroyed across South Lebanon are being kind of temporarily rebuilt as I speak. I've seen the footage of JCBs and diggers kind of pushing earth into these sort of holes in the ground where bridges used to be so that people can get back to their homes, even just temporarily, because this is just a 10-day ceasefire. It's a temporary ceasefire, and everyone is very cautious, and we're not sure what will happen at the end of these 10 days if it makes it that long.
What do we understand to be the relationship between the Lebanese president and President Trump?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, America sent envoys to Lebanon, you know, ever since, basically since 2023, after the October 7th attacks in Gaza and in Israel. And there's been sort of shuttle diplomacy back and forth to try and halt these hostilities, to stop Hezbollah firing. And there's been a lot of talks about the Lebanese government disarming Hezbollah. So there is a strong relationship between the U.S. and Lebanon. The U.S. is a big funder of the Lebanese military. The Americans are building one of the largest embassies in the region. But President Aoun is a relatively new president here in Lebanon. Trump has been very busy with Iran. And so these two talking is new. It's hard to know what their relationship is. But President Trump did say yesterday that he believes that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Lebanese President Joseph Aoun could meet in Washington on Tuesday. There could be direct talks, which would be the first time in four decades. You know, these two countries have been at war for decades officially, and even though there may not have been actual like hostilities. And so the idea of these two talking and meeting in Washington is historic, but is being sort of met with mixed reaction here in Lebanon. Hezbollah and its supporters do not want this, you know, direct talks to go ahead, especially while they're negotiating under fire. But there's a lot of Lebanese people who are weary of war, 1.2 million people displaced. They want to go home. So to answer your question, I don't know how close this relationship is, but I know that President Trump wants this to work because this is an Iran and U.S. ceasefire. The U.S. has pushed Israel into it, and Iran has pushed Lebanon or Hezbollah into it and to agree to it. So a lot is riding on this for President Trump, and he will want this to work. So he's going to be very friendly to everyone.
Oliver, thanks for your time. Look after yourself. Oliver Marsden, thank you. Middle East correspondent for The Observer, joining us from Beirut, 7:42. Let's come back to events here in the UK. The gravity of the situation facing Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. Alan's in Finchley. Are you buying what we've been told by his right-hand man earlier in the hour? Morning.
Hi, good morning. I can't believe it. How can a person in charge of any operation not understand what security operations can be overruled under him?
And then we're meant to believe that, as I use that expression with Mr. Jones, he was in blissful ignorance. That's what we're meant to believe, Alan.
Okay, well, let's say he's right. Let's say he's okay. Then, the follow-on, how many other people in power, in the cabinet and the prime minister, security clearances have been overrided as well?
Well, we'll never know. There is supposedly now a full inquiry or investigation going on, but I do find it, I'm going to say this, risible that they expect us to buy all of this, lastly, Alan.
It's just, well, it's not possible to believe. It really isn't possible to believe.
Alan, I can't disagree. Thank you. John in Enfield. Impossible to believe is what Alan says. I think he's probably nailed it, hasn't he? John, morning.
Exactly. I don't know if you remember, but the likes of Ian Duncan Smith, well, yep. he actually said at the time, you know, this so-called Chagos deal, which yes. wasn't a deal, it was a Chagos donation on behalf of Keir Starmer from a UK taxpayer. The Foreign Office was out in force, right, trying to get this thing signed over. Luckily, the Epstein thing blew up, and then the unfortunately, the Iranian war blew up, and then Trump saw the importance of Chagos and finally realised that what the Foreign Office was trying to push, yeah, that they didn't have to go ahead with this. When effectively they saved the taxpayer £35 billion from that yep. thief called Keir Starmer. But basically, I was shocked. I didn't even know that Ollie Robbins was in the picture. Do you remember Ollie Robbins, the chief...
Brexit negotiator under Theresa May. Yeah, that's
yeah,
the point I made.
I'm shocked that this guy is there anyway.
Four senior roles under four separate prime ministers, but supposedly he would choose to jeopardise his career, his standing, his reputation, by in some way authorising or allowing to authorise this clearance to be the clearance to be ignored or to be misreported, I should say. Clearance was ignored and fell up the line. It's very tough to take. John, thank you. I need to feature some of what you're saying. Thank you, John. Graham in Bushy. Will we be told what Mandelson failed as part of the vetting procedure? If something was already in the public domain, this will put more pressure on Starmer. Well, if you remember, I asked and asked and asked whether Darren Jones knew, and he never actually said whether he knew. It's just that he wasn't able to tell us. Mick in South Devon, how much is Ollie Robbins' payoff and what would his pension be? Hixie says, Prime Minister's furious and apoplectic because he's found out. It's all about blaming or relying on the process. Presumably it was something they inherited after 14 years. We'll come back to that. Also, coming up directly after the news...
He was relying on the vetting process as his defence. I think the vetting process was ignored. This is hugely serious, and I think he will probably have to go.
He's one of the many party political leaders, Sir Ed Davey, calling for possible. The Prime Minister stepped down. You'll hear more from him directly after the 7:45 LBC News headlines from Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has told LBC it's astonishing and unacceptable that Peter Mandelson's vetting process was overruled by the Foreign Office. It's after the peer was cleared to take up the role of US Ambassador despite failing a security report. Darren Jones has told Nick this morning that the top civil servant who made that decision, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. LBC weather, a band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK. The southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise as traffic is being held at Junction 7 at the M23. And that's following an accident and there are lengthy delays on the approach. The M3 is very slow northbound to Junction 3 at Lightwater because a cart was on fire and two lanes are closed for recovery. In Twickenham, the Chertsey Road remains closed westbound at St Margaret's Roundabout following an accident. Very slow on the South Circular Road westbound up to Streatham Hill because of the works where only one lane is open. On the trains, LNER services are disrupted to and from King's Cross following an investigation. Thames Link are running northbound from Hitchin to Biggleswade and there are delays between St Pancras and Luton.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that beans...
Mains Heinz.
And you love to ask.
Have you had yours?
All of you.
Love it.
Hate it.
And because...
I'm worth it.
When you need low prices on brands you love, like 150 grams of Heinz beans, 12-pack of Weetabix, 250 grams of Marmite, or 700 millilitres of L'Oreal Elvive Colour Protect Shampoo, look out for the Everyday Low Prices logo in-store and online. Tesco. Every little helps. Everyday low prices includes thousands of products across the majority of larger stores and online prices held until the 10th of May. Selected branded products only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wickes, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wickes.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Coulthard.
And I'm Jolie Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both Captain Nats for the boat ride.
Train back. So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result! Love the shot of them driving the boat. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
10 minutes before 8 is the time set to your watch, your clock, or check your mobile phone. Coming to more calls in a moment. Let's just do a couple more. A lot coming in from social media. Dean in Lymington. If the Prime Minister has allowed a process to exist that means this sort of decision can be made without his knowledge, that's his fault and makes him culpable. He can't just say he didn't know. It's his job to ensure he has the right processes. He needs to go. This one from Mike in London. If we even vaguely believe this government's excuse, doesn't it mean the civil service is totally out of control and unaccountable? Will they be reforming it and finding out who else has been appointed incorrectly? And lastly, this comes in from, I wanted to read this one. Where is it? Here we are. Paul in Camberwell. When is Ollie Robbins' phone going to be stolen? I'll just leave that in the air, shall I? Katie and Bushy. Katie, you're on the radio. Your reaction to what you heard. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Lovely to speak to you again. I was just absolutely shocked about what we heard from Darren Jones this morning.
Yep.
Your questioning of him was absolutely spot on.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I think it's about time that we got the lie detector test out, don't you?
I certainly don't think Sir Keir would wire himself into it. You have to almost feel sorry for Darren Jones as he was put out to take the flak in a sense. So what do you think's gone on here, Katie?
Well, we're just being gaslit constantly, Nick, aren't we? I mean, that's how it feels. I mean, there's so many nails in the coffin that you almost can't even tell that it's a coffin anymore.
I don't know what you do for a living, or I don't know what your husband or your partner does for a living, but if there was a crisis of this magnitude in your job or in their job, would you leave it for an entire weekend until Monday to make an address to the House? Wouldn't you find a place, whether you do it at Northolt before you fly to Paris, if you are flying, wouldn't you find a way or a means?
No, I absolutely agree. Well, I'm just a hairdresser. My husband works in software development and things like that, which I don't understand. But yes, no, the man has to give a statement, no matter what is going on, what his schedule is. This is so important that the public hear from Keir Starmer. The more he hides, the worse it looks for him.
Lastly, Katie, as a plain-speaking person, do you think they're buying time for the weekend to try and get their ducks in the row, to try and knit together some kind of cover story that they hope will hold?
I think you're absolutely right with that, Nick, 100%. I mean, yeah, just why not just delay it, kick the can down the road, and they'll think that the public will forget by Monday about all this, but I promise you they won't.
They won't. It'll actually get worse. Katie, have a good day. Have a busy day at your hairdresser's. Thanks, Katie. It will actually get worse. And Natasha Clark, OBC's political editor, Natasha Clark referenced it. I think it was the first comment she made in that it's going to be, I think she said a very testing or very tiring or very difficult weekend. I think difficult was the word she said. Because, again, speaking as someone who's been in and around journalism for a few years, this is not going to go away. You putting out the actually quite competent Darren Jones, that's not going to end it all. All that's happened, as you heard if you were listening, there are more questions that won't get answers. And that just excites and, in some instances, inflames the interest of relevant journalists. Peter in Stirling. Peter, let's come to this point. We won't hear from him, Starmer, until Monday. I find that extraordinary.
I think it's a bit of a delay, and I do think it's a bit concerning, but it's not his biggest vice. I think he's reacting like a lawyer, and he's reacting very methodically and forensically, which is great if you're a lawyer, not so good if you're Prime Minister, but I wouldn't say it's the worst vice. Okay. What I'm a bit disappointed by is, why are we not scrutinising the civil service more? That comment on social media about them being out of control, spot on. Do you remember Yes Minister back in the 80s?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I mean, like, the best comedy is based on reality. We've known for decades that there is careerism. Ollie Robbins came in under Tony Blair.
He did.
A Labour candidate until 2014.
Yep.
So who's more likely to have known Mandelson, who was under Blair, by the way? Robbins or Starmer?
don't you possibly see the hand of Mr. McSwimorgan McSweeney here?
Possibly as well. I don't think that... I think Starmer is not Prime Minister material, and he needs to go after the May elections, but I think he's become almost a victim of a system that he can't control, and I do think that it's a combination of political advisers run amok in the Labour Party, and the civil service, as Conservative and Labour Prime Ministers have found, is a force under its own right, and we should be asking to speak to the head of the civil service.
Lastly, as I asked Mr. Jones, and he conceded, the Prime Minister was aware of his Mandelson's links with Epstein, who was a paedophile, yet he continued with the appointment of such a key role. I find that baffling, Peter.
I do wonder why he didn't ask it more, but here's the thing. You've got your cabinet ministers, you've got the most senior civil servant. If they tell you that, and from what we've been told here, basically, we've been... Ryan's life. He's effectively, apparently said... He's given false testimony to a committee, and so it sounds like they've said he's lied and said that he's passed the vetting. We don't know yet, and that's going to be revealed. But if you go around and question each of your cabinet ministers saying, are you sure you're telling me the truth? Because if you are doing that, they shouldn't be in the position.
Peter, thank you. You've got a few issues on your line, but I promise you've got most of your points across, but I will leave it there. Let's just run you through the career of Sir Ollie Robbins. It's worth saying, after Oxford, he joined the Treasury. 10 years later, Tony Blair makes him his official principal private secretary. He then moves to the Cabinet Office under Gordon Brown, before serving as David Cameron's deputy national security advisor. And then, under Theresa May, he became the Brexit negotiator. And we are led to believe, well, Darren Jones said, that a man with this experience, who served four former prime ministers, was prepared to risk his career, risk his reputation, risk his standing in the Mandelson affair? Do you believe it? Let's ask a senior politician what he's taking from this. Sir Ed Davey, leader of the Lib Dems, joins me now. Good to have you on, Sir Ed. Hello, sir. Misleading the House. If you read his comments carefully, did he mislead the House, or was he just being rather ambiguous? Sir Ed, your view.
Well, I think he almost certainly misled the House. I don't think you can get out of this by sacking Ollie Robbins. The buck has to stop with the Prime Minister. You were just saying before I came on, Nick, and I don't sort of paraphrase what you said, but it does seem inconceivable that a senior civil servant like Ollie Robbins, who'd only just been appointed to this job, you know, just a few weeks earlier, that he would take such a decision without referring it to ministers. Let's remember what this decision was about. Peter Mandelson had been reviewed by the top secret people about whether or not he was suitable for being given top secret information. That's what all about national security, right?
Yep.
And they had concluded he wasn't. That's a pretty serious conclusion, right?
Yep.
And we've seen the Epstein files that we know Lord Mandelson had a record of actually giving secrets to Epstein. So you can see why they may have reached that conclusion. And the idea that that would be kept from number 10 seems fanciful, I have to say, fanciful.
Dame Emily Thornberry, a Labour grandee, also chairs the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, says, and I quote, we've been kept in the dark. People need to stop messing us about and tell us the truth. How embarrassing for the PM is that, Sir Ed?
Totally. I mean, the government's in chaos, Nick. Absolute chaos. And, you know, they rightly criticised Boris Johnson, the Conservatives, for, misleading Parliament and being absolutely chaotic and mired in scandal. Well, they are now. And they criticised the Conservatives then. I'm afraid they now have to follow their own approach. And I can't see how the Prime Minister can survive. I mean, let's...
What would the process be, though, Sir Ed? Sorry to talk over you, sir. What would the process... You say you can't survive, and you're not alone in thinking that. A lot of columnists and others are opining on the same theme. But what would the process be?
Well, what we are going to do, we're going to seek an investigation by the Privileges Committee. That's what happened against Boris Johnson over the Partygate scandal, if you remember.
Right.
And it's the way that Parliament can have to scrutinise ministers at the very highest level, in this case the Prime Minister, over whether or not they deliberately misled Parliament. And it's got the ability to not just call people like Keir Starmer, but also Ollie Robbins and the whole group of people who would have been involved. And we need an emergency debate to make that happen. We need to use it to get to the bottom of exactly what Keir Starmer knew and when. We just can't have another cover-up. I feel sorry for the public watching this. You know, they had to endure it through years of Conservative chaos. Labour said they were going to end that, and now they're repeating it totally. And people will be angry that they see these people abusing their power and, in this case, making such a dreadful decision over Peter Mandelson.
Lastly, Sir Ed, you'll recall in February the process known as a humble address, seeking to get the government to reveal all these necessary emails. Do you ever see the time, Sir Ed, when the public will be able to see, with necessary redactions for national security, I understand all of that, but we will actually see these papers and these emails?
We have to. There's been a vote in Parliament, decision in Parliament. It would be total contempt of Parliament, and if they don't, that's just another reason why they'd have to go. You know, Parliament is there for the people to say, we're going to hold you to account, whoever you are. And if they fail to listen to that, they have to go.
Sir Ed, busy man. Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you. Sir Ed Davey, leader of the Lib Dems. Caroline, can't get to your call. I hope you can stay the other side of the news because we must get to the headlines. But we will stay with this story and that interview with his right-hand man, Starmer's right-hand man, Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones.
I don't agree that he has misled the House. And I think any scrutiny of his statements to the House will show that that has not been the case.
In other news, how COVID vaccine victims' payouts should be doubled, but to exactly what level? And at Global Affairs, with Pope Leo saying the world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants. Yes, that war of words continues with Donald Trump as this peace fire is in place. Those stories and more will follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, has told LBC it's astonishing the Foreign Office was able to overrule the vetting process of Lord Mandelson.
The position that it has put the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers in as a consequence of the decision to overrule the recommendation from UK security vetting, it's of a scale of a problem that we've not experienced in government before. It is beyond unacceptable.
It emerged last night that Peter Mandelson was cleared to take up the role of US Ambassador despite failing a security review. We confirmed to LBC this morning that the top civil servant who made that decision, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Number 10 says Sir Keir Starmer was only made aware of the revelations on Tuesday and is furious. Darren Jones was asked by Nick why it took so long for Downing Street to react.
The information had not yet been fully assembled for him to be able to go to the House of Commons to make that statement. As you know, he's going to be giving a statement to the House of Commons on Monday.
Why Monday? A matter of this gravity?
But purely because Parliament is not sitting today because it's Friday, Nick. If the House was sitting today, the Prime Minister would be there this morning.
Well, surely he could make a statement from Number 10 or somewhere else.
I think it's important in these circumstances for the Prime Minister to make an address to the House of Commons.
Calls are continuing to grow this morning on Sir Keir Starmer to resign. The Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davey, has just told Nick he thinks the Prime Minister is ultimately responsible for the blunder.
Well, I think he almost certainly misled the House. I don't think he can get out of this by sacking Ollie Robbins. The buck has to stop with the Prime Minister. You were just saying before I came on, Nick, and I don't paraphrase what you said, but it does seem inconceivable that a senior civil servant like Ollie Robbins, who'd only just been appointed to this job, you know, just a few weeks earlier, that he would take such a decision without referring it to ministers.
Do stay with LBC for the very latest. One other story, a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon has come into effect. The truce brokered by the US could ease negotiations to end the war with Iran. President Trump says Tehran has agreed to hand over its enriched uranium, one of the key sticking points in talks about ending the conflict. Tehran is yet to respond to Mr. Trump's claim. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,589. It closed up 30 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather. A band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, we get through so many snacks. Have you got anything to help me save?
Well, we're always matching and lowering prices. So hundreds of Sainsbury's fresh fruit, veg and everyday products are price matched to Aldi. And every week with Nectar, you can save money on thousands of the products your family loves. So you can snack away knowing you're saving money. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. Selected products, Aldi price match not in NI. Nectar prices require Nectar account. Terms at sainsburys.co.uk/Aldi price match and nectar.com/prices terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight, Friday the 17th of April. As we've said before, a government in crisis, a prime minister on the brink. Did he mislead the House of Commons? That would do for him. If you read the words carefully, he maybe didn't, but growing pressure. And what of that interview with his right-hand man, Darren Jones, apparently blaming the civil service, the process, and blaming the one man, one of the most experienced mandarins, Whitehall mandarins there was. We'll come to more of your reactions on that. In other news, double your money. The COVID vaccine program was an extraordinary feat, but payments for the minority of people damaged by jabs should be doubled. Well, here's COVID inquiry chair, Baroness Hallett, speaking yesterday about the vaccine take-up.
There was lower uptake within communities in areas of higher deprivation and in some ethnic minority communities.
The promise from Wes Streeting, exclusively here on LBC with Call the Cabinet, to provide facilities for trans people within the NHS.
We need to make sure that we've got trans-inclusive spaces. And
we will have trans-inclusive spaces in all our hospitals.
Well, we've got to.
Really? How is that going to come about? What will that cost? Have they got the room? We'll get into that in more detail, remembering, of course, that was towards the end of yesterday's show. And the war of words continues. It's a Pope versus the President. Here's the latter of the two.
The Pope can say what he wants, and I want him to say what he wants, but I can disagree. I think that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So let's start by going back in time. Roughly exactly an hour ago, the first broadcast interview with the Chief Secretary of the Treasury Labour MP, Darren Jones, effectively his right-hand man. Here's a little of my exchange in the previous hour, particularly referencing the idea of a scapegoating of a top Foreign Office mandarin. Sir Ollie Robbins, who was Principal Private Secretary to Tony Blair, Cabinet Office for Gordon Brown, serving as David Cameron's Deputy National Security Advisor, Theresa May's Brexit negotiator, someone with this level of experience, decides to effectively change all the clearance. It is preposterous, Mr. Jones.
It's the Foreign Office took the decision to ignore the recommendation, and as I'm told, this is not an individual case in relation to the use of this rule. It's happened in other circumstances, which is why I have asked the department to urgently tell me how often this rule has been used to allow departments to ignore the recommendation of UK security vetting.
You're nothing if not a thorough man. I've known you for some time. Why did he fail the vetting?
I have not seen the documents in question. They have not been shared with me. As I say, these documents are often deeply personal in their information. So I can't...
Do you know why he failed the vetting?
I can't tell you the detail of...
I understand that, and it's possibly legally you can't as well. But do you know?
I've not seen the forms, and I cannot tell you why they came to the conclusion they came to.
No, but do you know? So you don't know why he failed the vetting?
All I know, and all that I can tell you, is that they concluded to recommend against his appointment because of concerns through the process.
So this blows up. You're very close to the Prime Minister. You two have a conversation, and neither of you know why he failed the vetting.
I have not seen the vetting documents.
No. Well, wouldn't you ask? For the love of God, you... Keir, what the hell has happened here? What have we got wrong? And no one's thought to ask what it is?
Sure, Nick, I have asked the question, but the documents are currently going through legal processes.
And on a legal point, we need to say Peter Mandelson, of course, has professed his innocence and denies a series of allegations. We've heard from one senior party leader. Let's get here from another now. Reform MP and leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, joins me now. Mr. Farage, what needs to happen next? Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, not a single word that Darren Jones said to you an hour ago is believable in any way. What we do know is the Prime Minister was informed on Tuesday, if you believe the story, informed on Tuesday that Mandelson had failed the vetting. Is Darren Jones trying to tell us that they were told that Mandelson failed the vetting, but not the reason why? And given they knew this on Tuesday, why did the Prime Minister not make a statement to the House of Commons on Wednesday? He was there for Prime Minister's questions. The opportunity was there to do it. And by the way, none of this adds up. The idea they weren't told about the vetting. Remember, in the House of Commons, Starmer actually said that the vetting had told him about the ongoing relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Then outside of the House, in Hastings, he gave a speech in which he said that Mandelson had cleared security vetting. So they are all over the place on this. It is totally unbelievable. And Robbins, yes, I mean, he's the sacrificial lamb in an attempt to save the Prime Minister, and it just isn't good enough.
One of the points you made, Mr. Farage, I put directly to Darren Jones. Why, if they learnt on Tuesday afternoon, have they waited 48 hours to be forced out of them by the Guardian newspaper? And I was told it was because the Prime Minister wanted to launch a full-scale investigation before coming to the public. Mr. Farage.
Just not credible, not believable in any way at all. I am in absolutely no doubt in my mind that this Prime Minister misled the House of Commons and lied to the country outside of the House of Commons. I am in no doubt.
You'll know better than I what parliamentary process allows for. What do you think should happen next? What will Reform UK try to influence to make happen next? Mr. Farage.
Well, he'll come to the House of Commons on Monday. He will give a statement. He will kick it into the long grass by saying they've launched an investigation, and if the other parties try to launch a motion of confidence, it wouldn't pass at this moment in time. What I think will happen is that he'll limp on to the 7th of May, and if I'm right, and Reform literally crush the Labour vote in the north of England, in South Wales, in parts of Lowland Scotland, then that will be the end of Starmer. In fact, funny enough, our campaign slogan is Vote Reform, get Starmer out, and I think we're the ones that can finish off the job.
Mr. Farage, do you think, with the Prime Minister, we have a case of incompetence or duplicity?
No, absolute duplicity at every level. There is absolutely no way that whatever you think of Ollie Robbins and his role in the Brexit fiasco, he is one of the most professional civil servants in this country.
Is he a man there you know? You've met him, have you, Mr. Farage?
Yeah, I don't know him well, but I mean, look, you know, he is an intelligent bloke. He's a professional civil servant. I disagree with his politics, but hey, that is by the by. There is no way a man like that would unilaterally make a decision of this kind. And equally, the Prime Minister cannot stand up and say that Mandelson passed security vetting and now claim later he wasn't told. That's not incompetence. Even Keir Starmer is not that incompetent. It is outright blatant dishonesty.
Last minute or so together. Do you think Sir Keir Starmer will be gone by the party conference season, Mr. Farage?
Oh, he won't last that long, Nick. Goodness gracious me. He'll be gone. He'll be gone by the middle of summer.
And lastly, a crisis of this gravity, we are told we cannot hear a statement in the House, obviously, until Monday, I understand that, but he could address it in another shape with some kind of press conference, a statement at Northolt before he flies to Paris, or whatever. Were you faced with a crisis of this, what would your actions be? Would you want to wait through a weekend?
I remember a similar situation when Ronald Reagan lied to the American people about the Iran-Contra affair. And what Reagan did is he went live on television and he said to the American people, I'm sorry, I lied to you, I apologise, I'm human, I've failed, I hope you'll forgive me. And you know what the American public did? They said, oh, isn't he wonderful? So, you know, there is something in life about fessing up. The trouble for Starmer is he can't do that now, really, because he's covered this up and told and been dishonest simply for far too long.
Grateful for your time today. Thank you. Leader of Reform UK, Reform UK MP, Nigel Farage, joining us here on LBC 13 after 8. Let's get to your calls. That's what we are about in the morning, getting your voices on the radio. James in Hampstead. James, your reaction to what you've been hearing. Good morning.
How are you? Good morning.
Thank you, sir.
He needs to get the lectern out Monday morning, not go to the House of Parliament and tender his resignation.
Why Monday? Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say... I'm sorry, go on. You want him gone, do you?
Yeah. Get the lectern out. Yeah, get the press in a big fat line and tender your resignation. Boris Johnson had a glass of wine, lied to the thing. This is far worse.
I mean, there were other, of course, instances with Boris Johnson, but you could argue that a piece of cake and some parties in the garden and a glass of Prosecco is possibly not on the scale of potentially ignoring clearance advice.
All the other fabrications, when he stood in with Rishi Sunak when they had their leaders' debate and Rishi said, you're going to tax people £2,500 more per family, absolutely spot on. He said, not a penny more on your council tax. Everyone's council tax has gone up 10% since he came to power. He's got to go.
He's got to go, but I don't think he will. Thank you, James. Have a safe weekend. Barry in Northampton. Barry, your take on this. What aspect do you want to explore? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, what I wanted to point out was what really bugs me is that you've got people like Keir Starmer and all the political elite saying we've got to convene a committee to find out if somebody's lying about something or not. Well, I don't understand why you have to do that, because you knew that Manderson was mates with Epstein and you knew that Epstein was a convicted paedophile. Why do you have to have vetting for something that you know? It'd be like convening a committee to find out if Donald Trump uses orange colour on his face. Well, we know he does, right? It'd be like saying we need to convene a committee and have vetting to find out if Netanyahu and Ahmadinejad like each other or not. Well, we bloody well know they don't like each other. You don't need a committee to know that.
Well said, Barry. Plain speaking, and I love it. Have a good one. Thank you. David, you'll be the next caller on this. Also, coming up after the news, were you or someone you know injured by the COVID vaccine programme? There's a suggestion that compensation should be doubled. Gareth Eve is a campaigner from Vaccine Injured and Bereaved UK.
My wife Lisa died at the age of 44 due to complications after receiving her AstraZeneca vaccine. My name's Gareth Eve, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show following the latest findings from the COVID inquiry.
Well, indeed, Mr. Eve will be speaking to me directly after these news headlines. It's 8:15 LBC News, Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has told Nick it's completely unacceptable that the Foreign Office overruled a security vetting recommendation to appoint Peter Mandelson as US Ambassador. Darren Jones has confirmed to LBC that the top civil servant who made that decision, Ollie Robbins, has left his post. Opposition parties are calling for Sir Keir Starmer to resign over the issue, but Number 10 says he was only made aware of the revelation on Tuesday. LBC weather. Rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK. The southeast staying dry. A high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is being held on the M25 clockwise at the Clackett Lane services, and that's because a van's broken down and there are delays on the approach. Very busy on the M1 southbound to Junction 11 at Dunstable South because a car's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. In Twickenham, the Chertsey Road remains closed westbound at the St Margaret's roundabout. It's following an accident. There are lengthy delays in all the surrounding routes, all the way back to Twickenham Bridge and from the Witton Road roundabout. Now on the trains, LNER services are still disrupted to and from King's Cross after an investigation from earlier. Also, Thames Link are delayed by about half an hour between St Pancras and Luton. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan and Northern lines.
This is LBC.
Oh, Fiona's back at the Monkey Safari again. She's hooked on Toyota Service and Aftercare. In fact, it's so good, she'll find any excuse to come back. From replacement wipers to service and MOTs, our perks include free refreshments, quiet workspaces, courtesy cars, and a new warranty with every eligible service. Toyota Service and Aftercare. So good, you'll find any excuse to come back. Eligible services are available until the vehicle turns 10 years old or 100,000 miles. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Oh,
You want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss.
Weight loss?
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs, and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8, and to a story which I know would have been higher up the news agenda, save for these extraordinary political developments involving Sir Keir Starmer, which is the COVID vaccine programme. Now, do you know someone who was hurt, was injured? Did you lose someone that you loved from the COVID vaccine programme? Well, it was an extraordinary feat, we heard yesterday at the inquiry, but payments for the small minority of people damaged by the jabs should be doubled, the public inquiry heard. In her report into the pandemic, Baroness Hallett, who's chairing the inquiry, said the UK's position as a world leader in biomedical sciences put into good stead to develop and introduce vaccines. But, she said, the government should urgently reform the scheme for payments to people harmed by vaccines, recommending almost doubling the maximum payout to at least £200,000 from the current upper limit, which is set at £120,000, adding anyone injured should receive proper recognition. She pointed that opportunities had been missed by successive governments to reform the damage payment scheme. Well, for someone, this is all too personal. Gareth Eve is with the Vaccine Injured and Bereaved UK and joins me now. Thank you for coming on, sir. Do you mind if I ask you to tell my listeners the circumstances of your involvement in this? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, so back in May 2021, my wife, Lisa, took the AstraZeneca vaccination and she died 3 weeks later. She died three weeks later.
My
yeah. God. So she was actually vaccinated on the 29th of April, 2021, and she died on May the 21st, 2021, from a condition called vaccine-induced thrombotic thrombocytopenia, which is now known to, you know, be caused by the AstraZeneca vaccination, blood clots with low platelets. Lisa had a massive blood clot on the base of her brain. She was in an induced coma for 3 or 4 days and, she died while I sat next to her while she was in her bed in intensive care.
Might I ask how old your wife was?
Lisa was 44.
Was she in good health?
Absolutely fine. Lisa was working up until she was vaccinated. Lisa was a BBC radio presenter, up in the Northeast. She was working right through the pandemic, on air. She encouraged people to get vaccinated because at the time that was just what it was, the right thing to do. It seemingly was.
I have to say. Yep. On your
goes. It was the narrative at the time, you know, and I've been vaccinated. Lisa was vaccinated. And as I say, she developed quite severe headaches, maybe 8 days after being vaccinated. And then across the weekend, that weekend, she gradually got worse. And then, as I say, she was admitted into hospital. fully aware of why she was in hospital. She knew she was being treated for this condition. She was responding quite well to treatments at the time, and over the course of her being in hospital, she just took a rapid turn with a huge bleed on her brain. Was put into intensive care, and she never regained consciousness, unfortunately. And as I say, she died on the 21st of May, 2021. So we're approaching.
We're approaching the fifth anniversary. Was it the first jab, or was it the second jab that
she only ever received one jab, the first and only AstraZeneca vaccination?
And in layman's terms, has a clinician, has a doctor ever explained to you what actually happened to your wife?
No. I was at the inquest, and I heard the coroner rule the cause of Lisa's death, but you know, and I heard what they did in a post-mortem and all these sorts of things, but I've never really fully understood what it was about Lisa that why was that reaction, you know, why did it react with Lisa as it did, you know. We've got family and sisters.
Did you have children together?
Lisa and I have got a son. He was 6 when his mum died.
Can we talk a little bit about the Hallett inquiry? What sort of ground is it making? Where does it need to go? How well, in your view, as someone who's been touched in this extreme grave fashion, how well is it performing?
I think the bottom line, really, from yesterday's information, the thing that I took from it, and I think the group took from it, was ultimately recognition. I attended the inquiry in January 25, and I was quite encouraged that vaccine injuries and deaths were being discussed in that sort of setting, in that sort of forum. And I think seeing it down there in print, you know, it's recognised as being real. For an awfully long time, the stories that myself and other people in the group have had to tell have been classed as misinformation. On a number of occasions, I've posted things about Lisa on social media, and it's been taken down. What happened to Lisa
It's been taken down. Taken down by whom? Just to clarify.
So if I've put something on Facebook, it's been flagged as misinformation.
I see.
The post has been taken down.
Yeah, I do.
Facebook has threatened to close accounts, you know, albeit that hasn't happened for quite a while, but it did happen initially. You get called anti-vax and all these sorts of things. But ultimately, going back to it, I think what the inquiry did is it's acknowledged that these injuries and bereavements are real. And I think where she said, and as you just said prior to us speaking, you know, the system needs urgent reform. It's simply not good enough at the moment. It's failing an awful lot of people, particularly people that are living with family members that are severely injured. It's failing people that are classed as not disabled enough to warrant support.
You're with the Vaccine Injured and Bereaved UK organisation. Do you have a sense of a number of people we might be talking about who either lost someone or who have serious or life-changing results?
Not off the top of my head, okay. No. There are far too many people affected by this, like I said, and I think one of the worst things is the people that are being left behind because of this arbitrary threshold of disablement. You have to reach a 60% disablement to qualify for this award.
Right. Yeah.
And there are people that are classed as not disabled enough. The government have admitted causation. They have said that the vaccination caused their injury, but you're not disabled enough to deserve a payment. And it's kind of like, what, we live in the United Kingdom, you know, the people took this vaccination to help. Now the state needs to help these people. I sat with Wes Streeting last year, and he told me that they are looking into ways to reform this scheme, to create a bespoke scheme.
Right.
And Baroness Hallett yesterday said it needs to be urgently reformed. So now it's time for him to do what he said he's going to do.
Lastly, no amount of money would bring back your wife or your son's mother. Has there been a payment made to you? Is it still in negotiation? What is the payment for those who have lost someone?
So the payment through the vaccine damage payment scheme is £120,000.
And that's it?
That's a flat rate.
For the mother of your now 11-year-old son?
Yeah.
Good grief.
Yeah. There are schemes in place. You know, we're not reinventing the wheel here. There are schemes in place. Post office, you know, more recently, infected blood. This was talked about at the inquiry. You know, there are schemes already in place to help people that have been affected by scandals, shall we say. You know, not forcing people into litigation. You know, there are schemes already in place. It's not a hard thing. I don't think to reform this scheme and start supporting people that are in desperate need.
I'm grateful for your time. Obviously going over very difficult circumstances, not least as we're approaching the anniversary of the 29th of April, as she had the chap. Gareth Evers, campaigner from Vaccine Injured and Bereaved UK, lost his wife Lisa and the mother of his young son as well. I need to tell you 132 million vaccinations are given out, and by June 2022 around 87% of the population aged over 12 had two doses. And the Department of Health obviously points that this is a very small number of cases. If you have been involved in that, do let us know. Here are the stories that are coming in. This is from Chris. This is a tragic story, but I hope there'll be balance because they have a real problem with vaccine hesitancy in the UK. Paul in Norwich. I was admitted to hospital one evening. I started having bad chest pains. I thought I was having a heart attack. After being in A and E for 24 hours and going to theatre, it turned out that I had pericarditis, inflammation of the lining of the heart, and it was caused by the vaccination. There's actually quite a lot coming in here. This is from, where's your name? Loz. My partner Tracy suffered 3 heart attacks and was in a coma for 4 weeks, 28 days after having the vaccine. She's very lucky to still be here. She is indeed. All right, David, you will be the next caller concerning Peter Mandelson. Well, really, since it was Keir Starmer and Peter Mandelson, I hope you can hold, and I'll give you a good run at it after the news, when we'll also be coming back to this conversation. As I said, we don't just cover the news, we make the news on The Breakfast Show. The local elections will be over in under a month. Will then this guidance be published by your colleagues?
Yes, Bridget Phillipson is ready to go and chomping up.
What, May? Late May?
May, yes.
It will come in May?
Yes.
That is the trans guidance and implications of that after this. It's 8:30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has told Nick it's unacceptable that Lord Mandelson's vetting process was overruled by the Foreign Office. It emerged last night that the peer was cleared to take up the role of US Ambassador despite failing a security review. Darren Jones has confirmed to LBC that the top civil servant who made that decision, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Opposition parties are calling on Sir Keir to resign this morning, saying that he misled Parliament last year after saying that full due process was followed. Number 10 has said that Sir Keir was only made aware of the latest revelations on Tuesday. Do stay with LBC for the latest. One other story, a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon has come into effect. The truce brokered by the United States could ease negotiations to end the conflict with Iran. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK through the day. The southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Did the Pope just call Donald Trump a tyrant? And why is J.D. Vance telling the Pope to lay off God?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, let's come back to the conversation. The hole in which the Prime Minister finds himself. Is he still digging? Keep digging. David in Twickenham. Your take on this, David. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Thanks for taking my call. I thought you hammered Darren Jones. He's a slick operator.
He
but
is.
You had him on the ropes this morning. I just wonder, the next time you get him on, I wonder whether you could ask him to explain why Peter Mandelson was appointed to the role of ambassador in December 24, but Sir Ollie Robbins didn't get his post till January 2025. Well, I sent you the screenshots of it.
Right.
I don't know what you think about feel about the veracity of Wikipedia, but it's all on there.
What do you think has gone on here, David?
Well, Darren Jones and Keir Starmer are trying to worm their way out of it.
Given the importance of this, I'll use the word again, gravity, don't you think we deserve to hear something today rather than stupidly leaving it over the weekend where there will now be 2 days, well, actually 3 days, allowing for Monday, of more speculation, more stories and more coverage in the newspapers, on the radio and on TV?
Well, I think Keir Starmer should have held his hands up weeks ago, as soon as it all came out. You know, I mean, he's meant to be running the country, and if he doesn't know something like this, we are in a mess.
Lastly, Nigel Farage quoted the instance where Ronald Reagan did actually, to use your expression, David, put his hands up and said, yes, I have misled you and I'm sorry, and the American public responded by actually allowing him and forgiving him, in a sense. Do you think Sakir could get away with that now?
I don't think he's got that in him, to be honest with you. The way they hammered Boris Johnson for everything he did, you know, they've created a rod for their own back this lot, I'm afraid.
Have a good weekend in Twickenham, David. Thank you for that. More calls coming in. 8:35 is the time. Now, let's go back to yesterday, exclusively on Call the Cabinet here on LBC. You were putting your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting. But I had a question for him, which is how the NHS intends to implement the much-delayed government guidance around single-sex spaces. Remember, yesterday was 1 year on for the Supreme Court ruling on this, and extra material was provided to Bridget Phillipson, the Education and Equality Secretary, which went to her in September. So we've waited a year and we've waited 7 months respectively. Mr. Streeting, when will this actually be implemented?
I believe very strongly that women's wards should be for biological women. What do we do about that biological female who is a trans man, looks, sounds, presents, lives his life as a man, is biologically female? We wouldn't put him on a women's ward. That would be degrading for him and humiliating and cruel. It would also be distressing for the women. So we need to make sure that we've got trans-inclusive spaces too.
And we will have trans-inclusive spaces in all our hospitals.
Well, we've got to.
Local elections will be over in under a month. Will then this guidance be published by your colleagues?
Bridget Phillipson is ready to go and chomping up.
Late May, yes. It will come in May.
Yes.
Well, let's put some of this to Helen Joyce, who's Director of Advocacy at Sex Matters. It's a human rights charity, joining me now. What did you take from that interview? What did you take specifically as regards provision within the NHS? Helen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for asking those questions, Nick. We were really interested to hear those answers. We've been trying to get answers for absolutely months.
Good.
So, are
they the answers you wanted to hear, though? That's the other thing.
Well, I mean, women's wards for biological females, absolutely, that's the central point. So the NHS has promised for many years that it has single-sex wards. This obviously doesn't cover A&E, and if they have to breach it because there's literally nowhere else to put someone, then they do that and they record a breach. But they have this weird thing in the NHS constitution called Annex B, where they say that you count as female if you say you're female. So it's all like, you know, they say that they offer female-only wards, but they don't actually. So that was the question, in effect, that you were asking, are you going to get rid of Annex B, that you didn't use that technical language? And he seemed to be saying very straightforwardly, yes, they were. And he did also say the most difficult edge case, because women who take testosterone really do look very male. Whereas men who go through these surgical or medical procedures don't tend to look female, because testosterone is really a hell of a drug in your teens. So, you know, you genuinely would have people who look like they're male, but they're actually female. Now, my feeling is that this should not be a priority for NHS spending when you think what the budget is like. My son was in hospital recently. He had to spend the night in a corridor. He waited till 2 a.m. to get a trolley to lie on, you know, and this is the story we all hear all the time. Do we really think that adding extra wards for a tiny number of people who aren't happy with their own sex is seriously the priority for NHS funding? What I would say is that a woman who takes testosterone is still female, and that's going to matter for her healthcare. And speaking for myself, I think that if you said to women in a ward, she is a woman, she's taken a lot of testosterone, so she doesn't look female, but she is a woman, I don't see why women would have a problem with that. It's men we object to in our wards.
I trust your son is better or is getting better.
Oh, he's fine. It was just an over weekend thing.
Okay,
thank
fine.
You.
As long as the lad's all right. So what is the reality, as you and your colleagues within Sex Matters, what is the reality as you see it on our wards and in clinics up and down the country, Helen?
Right now, if a man says he's a woman, they will put him in a female ward. And I mean, you know, the reason...
Can you give us an idea of how much distress that can cause? Do you speak with people who are on the receiving end of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely we are. We hear these stories in our inbox all the time. I mean, in hospital, you're vulnerable. You may not be able to get out of bed. You may not be able to look after how you're controlling your clothing. You might be in a hospital gown. They're open at the back. You need to get up to go to the toilet. You may need a, you know, catheter. You may need to have your, you know, to be helped to go to the toilet in a bedpan. And, you know, these things are just very undignified in a mixed sex setting compared to the single sex setting. They're bad enough anyway. And to have someone that you know is a man in the ward with you. And also, women have been gaslit about this. Women have said to staff, I'm sorry, that's a man, isn't it? And they've been told there are no men here, because the staff are going along with self-ID. So it has been actually a really long-running issue in the NHS, more than a decade now, that it has been gaslighting women about this.
More than a decade of that. Today you'll know that it's a year and a day since the Supreme Court ruling. What do you make of what is the government's reluctance to actually publish the guidance to hospitals, local authorities and other areas? Helen?
They don't like what it says, as far as I can tell, or at least they think their backbenchers don't like what it says. It's just too clear. It was super, super clear that biological female is the same thing as woman in everywhere that we're talking about anti-discrimination law, and that includes every single sex space. So they've been looking to sort of worm out of it for a year to find loopholes. But, you know, now, OK, Bridget Phillipson has said she'll publish it, and that will take away the big excuse that everybody's used. We've been hearing for a year, we're waiting for guidance.
Yes. Lastly, as I said to Mr. Streeting, this is a Prime Minister. I can't remember a more lawyer or legally obsessed Prime Minister than this one. Everything has to go through process, whether it's the support that we do or do not offer to our American allies at a time of war. Everything has to be legal. So we have a legal ruling from the Supreme Court and a Prime Minister who chooses to either ignore or defy it.
It's extremely upsetting what it says about the UK. I mean, it is a mature democracy with the rule of law, where the Supreme Court is the apex court and what it says is the law. And for a year, the government has been pretending, going la, 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 not listening, putting its fingers in its ears and saying, Supreme Court, what Supreme Court? You know, I don't know what to do about this. I need the regulator to give me guidance. It's just so distressing.
Best wishes to you and your family, your boy. Thank you, Helen Joyce, Director of Advocacy at the organisation Sex Matters. You might pick up on that, but it is understandably Sir Keir Starmer and the clearance for Peter Mandelson we're talking about. Mark's in Epping. Mark, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back on your show.
Not at all, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Well, from a military perspective...
Are you a military bloke, just to clarify?
Yeah, of 29 years.
Right, thank you. Right.
So, the particular experience I relate to is moving into an intelligence unit and dealing with vetting.
Ah! How interesting.
Right. This is... I've got 2 points to make here. Cutting to the chase, I believe it's inconceivable that the Prime Minister did not know that Peter Mandelson failed his vetting. And the reason I say this is the security services have several lines of communication directly to the Prime Minister.
Yep.
He heads up Cobra. That's just one example that we know about, and there'll be many channels that we don't know about. But if I just give you... before I go into the second reason...
I just want a bit of background. So you vetted what people for senior roles within the military, is that right?
No. I was in a unit where every single person had to be vetted, and I have... personal experience of seeing a communication where somebody failed their vetting.
Can you tell me what the unit was, or are you not able?
No, I cannot.
You can't. All right, on you. Okay, I understand then. Right, okay, but this is obviously a senior role in the defence of the United Kingdom in some fashion.
I wasn't particularly senior, but I was right in the engine room, so to speak.
All right,
I could see everything that moved.
Okay, on you go, sir. Yeah.
Okay, so if we were to really believe that only the civil service knew, and it's not just Ollie Robbins at fault, this is a whole cultural malaise in the Foreign Office, with the potential to undermine all foreign policy advice. And if you think of recent examples, we have Iran, Chagos Islands, and Gibraltar. But going on to my second point, which is why it's not believable that...
I want to get you on that. Yeah, expand on that, if you would, sir.
Well, we have advice, allegedly, about the Chagos Islands, and that we're under threat if we do not surrender sovereignty to another power that has never actually owned the Chagos Islands. This advice has never been provided. And it's not believable from a defence viewpoint. We have full control over the Chagos Islands. If any foreign power approaches those Chagos Islands now, they'll be blown out of the water or blown out of the air by whatever means they choose to go and make their approach. Mm. So it's false information has been fed from somewhere. So it's not believable. So... we're looking, is there a cultural problem in the Foreign Office? But I do think there is another issue here, and this is something that's been missed by everybody. There's one telltale sign that it is unlikely that it was widely understood that the civil service did think that the PM did know.
And what is that, sir?
There was no whistleblower. This has come out as a leak. This has come out as a leak, and you're an ex-journalist, you still are a journalist, and you're very well. This is not a whistleblower. So a whistleblower in the civil service, and I've met some really good civil servants, not a huge amount, that want to do the right thing. Somebody would have come out and whistleblown if they felt that the Prime Minister did not know. So one thing I can read from that, and from working with civil servants, is they did know that the Prime Minister did know, and so no point in actually whistleblowing.
Mark, I must leave it there. Thank you for your service, and thank you for your call. It's because I need to get to the headlines. There's so much social media and comment coming in. Let me just pick a couple out at random. This from Wayne in Burnley. The old saying becomes true again. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. At the next election, it boils down to which potential party leader lies the least. Starmer said the adults are back in the room. He didn't say the better lying adults are back in the room. Same subject. This comes in with Ashley in Beaconsfield. It's issue after issue with this government this week and a useless Prime Minister. He must call a general election. He's brought the country into more disrepute in the last 14 years of the Conservatives, and he's wormed their way through. The Mandelson scandal is on the Prime Minister. More on that to come. And, of course, no shortage of political reaction. Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch.
The Prime Minister said that Peter Mandelson cleared the vetting process. This is not true. That means he broke the ministerial code. He misled the country.
We'll have more Conservative reaction after this. It's 8:45 LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told LBC Keir Starmer did not mislead Parliament and will not quit following the latest developments in the Lord Mandelson saga. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, says it's astonishing that the Foreign Office cleared Mr. Mandelson to take the job as US ambassador despite failing a security review. Mr. Jones has told Nick that Keir was unaware that officials overturned the decision and was only made aware of it on Tuesday. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Twickenham, the Chertsey Road remains closed westbound at St Margaret's Roundabout following an accident. There are delays back to Twickenham Bridge, but also eastbound it's very busy from the Witton Road Roundabout. Also delays in Rayleigh at the Rayleigh Weir on the A127 westbound. That's following an accident. And the A13's very slow. The Stamford La Hope bypass eastbound up to the Five Bells interchange. There's some debris across the road. LNER trains to and from King's Cross remain severely disrupted. There are delays of about an hour and also various delays and cancellations, and that's because of an investigation from much earlier on. And Thames Link are delayed by about half an hour between St Pancras and Luton and also down to Sutton.
This is LBC.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss.
Weight loss?
I no, forget that. You just have to
keep dancing. Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear.
Advice. Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Coulthard.
And I'm Jolie Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thames Link Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Hello, beautiful people. Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine. Well, there really is only one subject in town now, which is, of course, Sir Keir Starmer, the departure of that senior Whitehall Mandarin. We're led to believe that was pretty much all his fault. A man who served successfully under four prime ministers, but seeming prepared to risk his reputation and his career over the Mandelson advice. We've heard from other major political parties. Let's get a senior member of the Conservative in. Alice Burkhardt is a shadow cabinet office minister, shadow Northern Ireland secretary, and it needs to be said, has done a lot of the groundwork here in Parliament to try and get to the bottom of exactly what did or did not go on concerning the so-called Mandelson affair. Alex Burkhardt joins me now. Thanks for coming on, sir. Where do you think the story goes next? Where do you think it needs to go next? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Thank you for having me on. Look, this goes right to the top, doesn't it? This goes to the man who ought to be taking responsibility for the decision he made to appoint Peter Mandelson to be our ambassador in Washington. And that's the Prime Minister. You know, the buck stops with him, or it should stop with him. And yet he seems absolutely determined not to take responsibility. This story just sort of keeps getting on, going to more and more ludicrous levels, where we've already seen the British ambassador to Washington resign. We've seen the Prime Minister's chief of staff go, Prime Minister's head of comms go, the cabinet secretary, now the senior Mandarin in the Foreign Office. No politician is taking responsibility. No politician is taking responsibility.
Excuse me, Mr. Berger. What should the Prime Minister do now?
I think he should resign. And this is the most grotesque...
What if he was lied to, or he didn't know, Mr. Berger?
This is either the most grotesquely incompetent administration in history, or people are lying. Or both. You know, it could be both. And in very simple terms, if the Prime Minister was told before Tuesday night, he has been lying and he needs to go. We know that he was told on Tuesday night. So even if he didn't know before, then he knew on Tuesday night. And he has a very solemn responsibility to come to the House and correct the record as soon as possible on an issue like this. He didn't do that on Wednesday. He didn't do that on Thursday. This story only broke because of good investigative journalism from The Guardian. That was the only point when Number 10 said, yeah, you're right, there's a problem. The Prime Minister hasn't taken responsibility. He's effectively misled the House. This goes right to the top. It's on him. And at some point, he's going to have to take responsibility for it.
I challenged Darren Jones just after 7 o'clock this morning on this, and I said, a matter of this gravity, if you learnt on Tuesday evening, why the hell did you wait 48 hours? Yep. To which the response was that the Prime Minister was insistent on a full investigation, full inquiry, so he knew all the facts so that he could come and present whatever has as absolutely copper-bottomed. Mr. Burkhart.
Yeah, look, we know that this only came out because the journalists got onto it. And the Prime Minister knows, everybody in Downing Street would have known that something of this gravity you have to deal with immediately. The Prime Minister, at the very least, should have come to the House on Wednesday and said, something has been drawn to my attention, I am now investigating it. He went and hid in his bunker. And I'm sorry, there comes a point where you just can't, you know, trust this man. And you can't, it comes a point where you don't deserve to be Prime Minister anymore.
Of course, if he is found to have misled the House of Commons, that's it. He's pretty much toast. But if you read carefully, and I'm sure you have, the words he never actually said that he'd had clearance in any statements in response within the House of Commons or response to your party leader, did he?
Well, actually, if you go back to February when Kemi Badenoch,
yes,
asked the Prime Minister in the House of Commons whether Mandelson had passed security vetting,
yes,
and whether security vetting had raised issues, the Prime Minister says yes, he did have vetting, and yes, issues were raised, and that suggests very strongly that the Prime Minister was appraised of the process.
Well, let me read you, the 4th of February, Kemi Badenoch, yep. Can the Prime Minister tell us, did the official security vetting he received mention Mandelson's ongoing relationship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein? To which the Prime Minister replied, and I quote, yes, it did. As a result, various questions were put to him. I intend to disclose to the House the national security and prejudice to international relations on one side. I want to make sure that the House sees a full documentation so it will see for itself the extent to which, time and time again, Mandelson completely misrepresented the extent of his friendship with Epstein.
Yeah,
does that get him off the hook, Mr. Burkhart?
Absolutely not, Nick. Two very good reasons. First, he in that statement which you just read out, he clearly shows that he was being appraised of the vetting process, right? He clearly shows that he's in the loop. And the second thing is he refers to the publication of documents. Now, myself and Kemi, we put down something called a humble address a few months ago, you'll remember,
yes,
where the House of Commons forced the government to say it would disclose all the documents associated with Mandelson's appointment. We had a dump of documents a few weeks back. There was nothing about this in that tranche of documents. Nothing at all. Why not? Right? Why was the House of Commons not given this information then? Why was it held back? Yeah, this is cover-up after cover-up. This is lie after lie. All coated in this sort of thick layer of incompetence. And I think everybody is sick of it.
Lastly, as a journalist, I find it mystifying that he's chosen not to make some kind of speech today, because
yes,
it allows a full weekend of speculation, at least three more days of headlines, radio shows such as these, TV news bulletins. As a politician, can I put it to you that of this, again, I'll use the word gravity, here there should be some kind of statement today rather than trying to buy more time, Mr.
Absolutely.
Burkhart.
The Prime Minister is in hiding. And you're quite right. Yeah, journalists and opposition MPs like myself are going to carry on digging into this over the weekend. Let's see what Mr. Robbins has to say. Let's see what Mr. Robbins' friends and allies have to say, because they will have a side to this story. So I think the Prime Minister has totally mishandled this. As you say, the appropriate thing for him to do would have been to hold a press conference this morning and answer questions. But he is he's running and he's hiding because he is scared of the truth. And he is scared of where this is going.
Alex Burkhart, thank you. Congratulations on all the running you've done on this in the House of Commons. You've done a lot of heavy lifting on that, so well done to you. Shadow Cabinet Office Minister, Shadow Northern Ireland Secretary. So we've really rounded up all the reactions from you there. And, of course, now, most importantly, we'll continue with your reactions. We'll have more of the social media, but some people have been hanging on the line for quite some time, one of whom is Sarah in Windsor. Sarah, you want to tell me what on this? Good morning.
Hello, yes. I'm a lawyer. I worked for 13 years advising the government on betting.
Oh, right.
Procedures and saw Ollie Robbins.
Might I ask which government? Quite recently?
It was a while ago, but it was at the time when Ollie Robbins was there.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's the Prime Minister doesn't need to be told that Mandelson has failed vetting. He knows. He was the head of the DPP. He was responsible for vetting decisions. They would have passed his desk and he would have had to give them the final approval. When in that post, he would have to allow people who worked in his organisation access to the most sensitive casework that one can imagine. Mm-hmm. And he would have been the final arbiter of those decisions. So he would have, not only as Prime Minister, but as in that post, have known how the DV process works. So that's the first point I'd make.
Yep.
He decided to appoint Mandelson without DV. And he knows what access Mandelson would have had to, what material Mandelson would have had access to, and what sensitive capabilities. It's one of the most sensitive posts you can possibly imagine. And he would have had, Mandelson, he knew he would have had to have develop vetting, and he would have had, in addition, additional security requirements of him, not just for develop vetting. He was appointed without develop vetting. When someone fails develop vetting, two things have to happen. So one, security arrangements need to be put in place to manage the risk. And that's what the person making the decision would have had to do.
How fascinating. Yep, on you go. Yep.
They would have had to manage the risk. And yep. that's a long process of government, and indeed it would have been the Prime Minister's decision and David Lammy's position to manage the risk. How are we going to deal with a situation where we want to appoint somebody who's failed develop vetting? He couldn't have been continued in post without that discussion taking place. And the second thing that needs to happen is he would have had to be interviewed. This is all set out in the Cabinet Office guidance. It is fanciful and completely unrealistic for the Prime Minister to assert he's not aware of Cabinet Office guidance that's published about how vetting works.
This is fascinating background as someone who's worked in this field. And this is pure speculation, but what do you think has happened lastly, Sarah?
I believe that what's happened is a vetting assessment was provided by the agencies. It went to the relevant government department. He's already in post. He could have been removed immediately. He shouldn't have been appointed. Mm. No one could possibly have appointed him knowing what they knew. But a letter would have been sent and it would have said at the bottom of it, if you want to seek to manage or resolve these security concerns, you need to interview this person. So an interview would have been carried out. That's where Morgan McSweeney's phone going missing comes into play. An interview should have taken place in the normal way if you're following due process, which is it all should be recorded on the vetting file. That should have all happened. And then you would have a decision about can we rely on the answers he's given you in interview? And if you then form the view you can manage all the security concerns that have been raised by the agencies and other information that's been provided, if you then form the view that, yes, I believe what's been said in interview and I'm satisfied it can overcome all those security concerns and the assessment by the agencies, I will then have to put in place formal arrangements to manage the risk.
How incredible. We're going a little bit late to the news. Final question. Sir Keir Starmer is nothing if not a survivor. Given the extensive legal background, DV, developed vetting background, does he survive this, Sarah?
Not if people put the right questions to him.
I'll call you off air. No, I'm only kidding, but Sarah, thank you. Fascinating. We must move on. Thank you for all the background there, the field that you have worked in. In a troubled world, is it good to hear someone trying to speak some kind of sense?
The world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants, yet is held together by a multitude of supportive brothers and sisters.
That's Pelt Leo speaking in the Cameroon yesterday. Of course, in a related conversation, there is this fragile ceasefire, but will it hold? And a ceasefire for the weekend at number 10 Downing Street. The Prime Minister off to Paris. He will not be making any statement until Monday. the wisdom of that. It gives the news journalists, gives the journalists another full weekend of those news headlines. We'll have analysis from my LBC colleague Andrew Marr on that crisis. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a cabinet minister has insisted to LBC that Sir Keir Starmer did not mislead Parliament following new developments in the Lord Mandelson saga. Last night, it emerged that the peer was cleared by the Foreign Office to become US ambassador, despite failing a security review. The top civil servant in charge of that department, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, has told Nick this morning Sir Keir only found out about it on Tuesday and is furious.
It's hard to describe, quite frankly. I mean, I've used the word furious, but it's of a bigger scale. As I say, not just because of the...
Well, do expand.
Well,
when you say a big... I mean, presumably, some pretty fruity language I'd ask you not to repeat, Mr. Jones.
Well, exactly. I'm not going to add more colour, but given the nature of the problem here, not just in terms of the appointment, but the position that it has put the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers in, it is beyond unacceptable.
Sir Keir Starmer is expected to give a statement on the issue in the House of Commons on Monday. Opposition parties are calling for Sir Keir's resignation. Reform UK leader Nigel Farage has told Nick Sir Ollie Robbins is being used as a sacrificial lamb.
The idea they weren't told about the vetting. Remember, in the House of Commons, Starmer actually said that the vetting had told him about the ongoing relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Then outside of the House, in Hastings, he gave a speech in which he said that Mandelson had cleared security vetting. So they are all over the place on this.
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing in regards to his friendship with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. President Trump says Iran has agreed to hand over its enriched uranium, one of the key sticking points in talks about ending the conflict. Tehran is yet to respond to Donald Trump's claim. Separately, a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon has come into effect. Three people have been charged after an attempted arson attack at the offices of a Persian media group in northwest London. Police say a lit container was thrown at a premises in Wembley on Wednesday night. No injuries were reported. A 21-year-old man, a 19-year-old man and a 16-year-old boy have been charged with arson with intent to endanger life. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 19 at 10,570, the pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said, nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say naturists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after nine, Friday, April the 17th. The world is ravaged by a handful of tyrants, so says Pope Leo. Obviously, I would suggest having yet another dig at the president, but isn't it refreshing sometimes to hear someone trying to bring some kind of clarity? Could I even suggest moral clarity to an ever-increasingly troubled world? Troubles, of course, at number 10. The Prime Minister's Chief Secretary, Darren Jones, put out this morning to try and defend what would seem for many to be the indefensible over the Mandelson affair. Can you give me a level, a metric of the Prime Minister's anger when you spoke with him?
I mean, it's hard to describe, quite frankly. I mean, I've used the word furious, but it's of a bigger scale.
Veteran political commentator, my LBC colleague Andrew Marr, his interpretation later in this hour, and with such desperately grave news. Towards the end of the show, do you have a change of pace? You'll hear from Chris Hackham, broadcaster and environmentalist, how his dogs, and there are two of them, vegan diets could have saved the dogs' lives. Sid and Nancy are the dogs. But how? Later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Now, that lovely expression that you often hear in journalism called speaking truth to power. And is that what we heard from the Holy Father, Pope Leo, yesterday? Criticising leaders who spend billions on wars, saying the world was, as I said earlier, being ravaged by a handful of tyrants. Unusually forceful comments during a visit to the Cameroon. His remarks came just days after a high-profile war of words, or spat, with President Trump over the conflict in Iran.
The masters of war pretend not to know that it takes only a moment to destroy. Yet often, a lifetime is often not enough to rebuild. They turn a blind eye to the fact that billions of dollars are spent on killing, on devastation. Yet the resources needed for healing, education, and restoration are nowhere to be found. The world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants, yet is held together by a multitude of supportive brothers and sisters.
So that's the Pope talking about the Iran war, but the war of words continues with President Trump.
I have nothing against the Pope. His brother's MAGA all the way. I like his brother, Louis. I'm not fighting with him. The Pope made a statement. He says Iran can have a nuclear weapon. I say Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. I can disagree with the Pope. I have a right to disagree. I have a right to disagree with the Pope.
Let's turn first to Dr. Gavin Ashenden, who's a theologian, former chaplain to the Queen, editor of the New English Catholic Substack, and regularly helps us with religious matters. He's always there to provide comfort and succour and counselling. Doctor, good to have you on. Appropriate language from someone in the position of the Holy Father, in your view? Good morning.
Well, good morning. Context is everything, I think. There's nothing wrong with what the Holy Father said. It's true. The problem that comes when you put it in a particular context. I would have said that if he wanted to criticise the arms industry and the way in which in the last 70 years the arms industry seems to have affected political judgment, then he would be absolutely right and it would need saying and very clearly. The difficulty I have, I think, is it's coming in the context of this war of words. And then the moral standards you adopt to judge political questions depend on where you get your information from. So from my own point of view, I think Donald Trump may be worth giving a peace prize to for saving Israel from being obliterated by nuclear weapons. But it depends on whether or not you believe the people who think that the Iranians were going to use nuclear weapons. Those who do think so will be glad of Trump's intervention. Those who think they've been spoofed will think Donald Trump went to war for the wrong reasons. So I'm sorry that the Pope is using this particular moment to make this very profound point about warmongering. And I take some small comfort in that he hasn't named the tyrants. Again, I'm not altogether sure that the leader of the world's biggest free democracy would qualify as a tyrant, but then that's another thing to argue about.
Do you really think there is an argument for President Trump to be in receipt of a peace award?
Yes, I really do. I mean,
a lot of my listeners will be choking on their cornflakes, Doctor.
Yes, I know. That'll be fun, won't it? I'm sorry about that. But here's the reason for it. Well, the Iranian regime are a particular kind of Islam. It's Shia Islam, and they believe that it's their duty to bring about an apocalypse in order to produce the right eschatological, ultimate religious end to their vision. So the use of a nuclear weapon to bring about an apocalypse is actually consistent with the way they interpret Islam. The real problem for us has been, with nuclear war hanging over us, is that mutually assured destruction has given us a degree of safety, because no sane people would do it. But if you have an insane view of the world, and you think you really should blow people up in order to bring about a religious solution, then I think that's quite terrifying. Now,
isn't Donald Trump blowing people up in the Iran conflict as well?
Well, but the question is, what's it for? Now this is the question the Pope's addressing. Is what Donald Trump is doing self-defense in order to rid the world of a nuclear weapon, or is it naked American aggression for self-aggrandizement? I think it's the former.
Lastly, how does someone in the extraordinarily responsible position of being the Pope, or here in the United Kingdom, should you say, the Archbishop of Canterbury, how do they weigh up the balance between what they have to say, what they have to respect as their age as a religious leader, but also wanting to comment and opine on affairs that, of course, do affect humanity and people's safety and security?
Well, that's a very good question and a really important one, because people in our culture want to corral religion off into a separate area. But actually, it's all about human ethics, human nature, human ethics, how we treat each other. I think the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury have every right to speak politically, so long as it's not partisan. And the difficulty with the context in which the Pope is speaking at the moment is many of us suspect there's an element of partisanship because of the war of words that's taken place. I'm enormously grateful for the Pope for his ethical leadership. I just hope very much that he doesn't undermine his credibility by turning this into a kind of political football.
Well, some fascinating views you've expounded here. I'm grateful for your time. Thank you. Dr. Gavin Ashenden is a theologian, served as chaplain to the late Queen and editor of the New English Catholic Substack, giving a justification for a form of a peace prize. That's something we might want to explore. Let's come back with what we heard from the Pope. Dr. Nigel Fletcher is a political historian at King's College London. Thank you for coming on, sir. What does history tell us about the involvement of senior religious figures, whether they be archbishops, whether they be the popes, in the world of politics? What should we learn from that? Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. I think what's interesting is that in Britain, as distinct from the United States, we seem content to leave religion to religious leaders. And so you would have the Archbishop of Canterbury and members of the House of Lords who are bishops opining on religious matters in our Parliament. And we don't really expect politicians and the Prime Minister to be religious leaders in that way. And I think we're quite uncomfortable when we do see politicians wearing their faith on their sleeve. It's quite unusual in a way that I don't think it is in the United States, which I think makes Donald Trump's interventions slightly different to a debate that we would have in the UK.
Similar question I put to my previous contributor, Doctor. In a perfect world, and it is anything but in a perfect world, how does a religious leader balance his or her views on political aspects that affect the lives of their flock?
Well, I think it's quite difficult, particularly given the fact that we do have an established church in the UK. We have effectively a state religion, and that's the reason that we do have bishops in the House of Lords. And so they are required to give their views on legislation as it passes through Parliament. And so, in a way, they are obliged to give views on political matters as part of their job as legislators. And that's obviously quite uncomfortable for politicians, because they will have senior members of the church standing up and making statements like that. But, of course, there are other sort of religious leaders, either in Parliament or in public life, who will also make their views clear. And whilst that's uncomfortable for politicians, I think you'd have to say that it is part of their job. It is part of what they are there to do. They are leaders in a different way to politicians, but certainly they are obliged to give their views as part of their leadership in their religion. So there's always going to be that tension between them, but it's a question of, as you say, of the demarcation between what is political with a large P, and what is something that they shouldn't be getting involved with. But historically, we have prime ministers, going back in history, who have clashed with church leaders, and effectively their view has always been stick to your lane.
So to the Pope yesterday, lastly, if we can, Doctor. Should he have stuck to his lane? Was it appropriate where he went with his comments? Did he step over a line, Doctor?
I don't think so. I think that certainly with regard to his leadership of the Catholic Church, this is a world religion that crosses international boundaries. He's not simply sitting there as a leader of a religious organization in the United States and criticizing Donald Trump specifically. He has a global role, and I think that Donald Trump, not unusually, sees it as being all about him. But I think that the Pope has been quite clear in trying to say that he's not specifically talking about one person. He may, of course, have his own views on that. But I think the Pope is in a particular position because of that, enormously significant world role that he has as the leader of the Catholic Church. Okay. And that's, I think, becoming more difficult for Trump and for the United States, because for the first time we have an American Pope. Okay. And it's being seen in that way. But I think that, you know, it's very difficult when you have a political leader sort of telling the Pope to use the phrase, we just have to stay in his lane.
Yes. And
J.D. Vance sort of criticizing him on religious terms. I mean, I really don't think this is an area that any British politician would ever want to get into.
Doctor, I will leave it there. Thank you. Nigel Fletcher, you're a political historian at King's College London. Thank you for your input. The world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants. That says the Pope missed. Meanwhile, Trump says Pope Leo is weak on crime and terrible for foreign policy. Whose corner are you in? Also, coming up after the news, that interview with Darren Jones, the PM's right-hand man, when I asked, was he lying or being utterly incompetent?
What the Prime Minister was referring to was the process that allowed the Foreign Office to overrule the recommendation put to them.
The view of my LBC colleague Andrew Marr right after this 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told LBC Sir Keir Starmer did not mislead Parliament and will not quit following the latest developments in the Lord Mandelson saga. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, says it's astonishing that the Foreign Office cleared Mr. Mandelson to take the job as US ambassador despite failing a security review. Mr. Jones has told Nick that Sir Keir was unaware that officials overturned the decision and was only made aware of it on Tuesday. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Couple of problems now on the M25. Firstly, on the Hertfordshire stretch, it's very slow clockwise at junction 22 at London Coney. It's because of an accident where one lane's closed. And then on the Surrey stretch, it's very slow clockwise at junction 6 at Godstone, and that's where a car's broken down. There are queues of at least 3 miles on the approach. Slightly better news now in Twickenham. The A316 Chertsey Road has just reopened westbound at the St Margaret's roundabout. It's still very slow, but the road is now back open. On the trains, LNER services are delayed by about an hour to and from King's Cross. That was after that investigation from much earlier on this morning. Thames Link are delayed by about 20 minutes between St Pancras and Luton, and also down to Sutton.
This is LBC.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world. We're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George's up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's come back to the conversation that I had concerning Darren Jones and the Prime Minister, and of course what exactly they did or did not know regarding Peter Mandelson. I remind you, no statement, of course, from the PM until Monday. And as I discussed already, that gives effectively journalists and others a whole weekend to speculate. Well, we'll hear from Andrew Marr, my LBC colleague, in a moment on that. But here's a little of exchange in the last hour with senior Labour MP, the first hour of the show, I'm sorry, the first hour of the show, with senior Labour MP and Chief Secretary of the PM, Darren Jones, over what some are seeing as the scapegoating of a senior civil servant or Foreign Office Mandarin. Sir Ollie Robbins, who was Principal Private Secretary to Tony Blair, Cabinet Office for Gordon Brown, serving as David Cameron's Deputy National Security Advisor, Theresa May's Brexit negotiator, someone with this level of experience, decides to effectively change all the clearance. It is preposterous, Mr. Jones.
It's the Foreign Office took the decision to ignore the recommendation, and as I'm told, this is not an individual case in relation to the use of this rule. It's happened in other circumstances, which is why I have asked the department to urgently tell me how often this rule has been used to allow departments to ignore the recommendation of UK security vetting.
You're nothing if not a thorough man. I've known you for some time. Why did he fail the vetting?
I have not seen the documents in question. They have not been shared with me. As I say, these documents are often deeply personal in their information. So I can't...
Do you know why he failed the vetting?
I can't tell you the detail of...
I understand that, and it's possibly legally you can't as well. But do you know?
I've not seen the forms, and I cannot tell you why they came to the conclusion
So you don't know why he failed the vetting?
All I know, and all that I can tell you, is that they concluded to recommend against his appointment because of concerns the process.
So this blows up. You're very close to the Prime Minister. You two have a conversation, and neither of you know why he failed the vetting.
I have not seen the vetting documents.
No. Well, wouldn't you ask? For the love of God, Keir, what the hell has happened here? What have we got wrong? And no one's thought to ask what it is?
Sure, Nick, I have asked the question, but the documents are currently going through legal processes.
But you can't share it with the listeners, is that right?
No, I've not seen them.
We still don't know why Peter Mandelson failed.
I'm not allowed to see those documents at this point in time. No.
Can you give me a level, a metric of the Prime Minister's anger when you spoke with him?
I mean, it's hard to describe, quite frankly. I mean, I've used the word furious, but it is of a bigger scale. Not just because of the...
Well, do expand. Well... When you say a big... presumably, some pretty fruity language I'd ask you not to repeat, Mr. Jones.
Well, exactly. I'm not going to add more colour, but given the nature of the problem here, not just in terms of the appointment, but the position that it has put the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers in as a consequence of the decision to overrule the recommendation from UK security vetting, and the fact that the system even allowed for that to happen in the first place, it's of a scale of a problem that we've not experienced in government before. It is beyond unacceptable, and it is right that you, your listeners, the Parliament, as well as I and other ministers, I'm not just astonished by the fact that this could happen in the first place, but need to take action to make sure it cannot happen ever again.
Last question, and this is the political side. Whether or not he's lost the trust of the nation, only time will tell. But Kemi Badenoch, Sir Ed Davey and others say that he has misled the House, which obviously, as you know better than anyone, is a very grave offence. Do you recognise that? Has Sir Keir misled the House?
No, I don't agree that he has misled the House, and I think any scrutiny of his statements to the House will show that that has not been the case.
Well, let's turn to experienced political watcher, might I even say veteran political watcher, if I'm allowed to, Andrew Marr, presenter of Tonight with Andrew Marr on LBC's, of course, Monday through Thursday at 6, joins me now. Andrew, Sir Keir is nothing if not a survivor. I'm sure you'd allow that. Does he survive this? Morning, Gov.
I think not for very long, Nick. I had a conversation with him, a private conversation I've talked about already, only a few weeks ago, when he said, "I'm going to prove you wrong." I said I didn't have faith that he could do this. I'm going to fight. And there's a grittiness about him and a sense that he does not want to be forced out as a failure. His current thinking, I'm told, has been stick it out for a year. If things are still this bad this time next year, hand over perhaps to Andy Burnham in a kind of more controlled way. But he really, really wants to fight. However, I have to say, I think we might be in a new constitutional moment there, listening to the conversation with Darren Jones about quite how angry the Prime Minister is said to be today. I think for the first time, the Prime Minister of the UK may have literally exploded. And they may be trying, there'll be a very specialist team inside Downing Street trying to put him back together this morning. But the truth is, Nick, as we both know, everyone can say he should resign. He wants to resign. I heard Nigel Farage on your show earlier on. Mm. But the only person who can make Keir Starmer resign is the person who brushed Keir Starmer's teeth this morning and then shaved Keir Starmer's chin and went downstairs for Keir Starmer's coffee. Only Keir Starmer can make himself resign. And I think he's very dogged and very tough. There is a case for him not going this weekend, you know, which is that they're going to be absolutely hammered in these elections in May, everybody thinks. And in a sense, take the party through that, take the punishment, absorb it yourself, and only go when the worst is over. So whoever takes over has been through the worst and can rebuild from then. But I think in terms of the politics, Nick, what's going to happen this weekend is a lot of phone calls. Because what Keir Starmer really needs to know next is anybody else going to move? Is Wes Streeting thinking, I'm sorry, this is the moment for a change, it has to happen? Is Angela Rayner thinking that? Is anybody else in the cabinet thinking that? Is anybody going to come to him over the weekend or on Monday morning and saying, terribly sorry, Keir, we love you to bits, but it's all over? Is that going to happen? He needs to know that.
Let me ask you this, Andrew, but before your distinguished career in on the TV, you were, of course, a newspaper editor. The wisdom or otherwise of giving 2 days, well, actually three if you allow Monday, 3 days of coverage now. Should there have been some form of statement at some point today, Andrew?
Well, the Prime Minister's office did put out as clear a statement as they could manage yesterday evening. And we've had Darren Jones on again today. They will try very, very hard to leave it at that. But, of course, there's the Sunday shows. I used to do one of them. Some poor sod will be sent out to be absolutely battered by our colleagues on the Sunday show. I think Ollie Robbins has been a very distinguished public servant. You know, he fought very hard.
You know him, Andrew. Presumably you have met
him. I don't really. I mean, I've met him, but I wouldn't say I know him. But, you know, he was one of the sort of heroes of the Brexit episodes, a very, very distinguished person, admired by people on both sides of politics. And I have to say, Keir Starmer has a very poor record in keeping top civil servants around him. If you think Sue Gray, Morgan McSweeney, Chris Warmold, of course, the cabinet secretary, left just in February, as did Tim Allen, the director of communications. This prime minister does not seem to be able to hold senior people around him for very long. Something always goes wrong. And I haven't even come on to the dozen or so ministers who've resigned under his watch.
If you look at what he said in the House, different to what he said at a press conference in Hastings, where he said, talked about this, to me, despite Kemi Badenoch, Nigel Farage, Sir Ed Davies, which I don't sense that he has misled the House in the language actually said in the House of Commons. Andrew.
Well, we say misled. I think the crucial thing is consciously misled. In other words, he's clearly misled the House because he said due process was followed, and it was not. Due process means the DV, the vetting process, getting through that. And Mandelson failed the vetting process and was appointed anyway. The appointment was brushed through by the Foreign Office. That is not due process. So to that limited extent, he clearly did mislead the House. But if he himself was lied to by the Foreign Office, perhaps by the Cabinet Office, by officials around him, then that's not consciously misleading. I mean, if I say something to you, Nick, that is not true, but you believe me and you repeat it, you are not consciously lying. I trust.
Andrew, I will leave it there. Thanks as ever. Andrew Marr, presenter of Tonight with Andrew Marr. He's got tonight off, but Mondays and Thursdays, of course, from 6. The Sunday Politics Show, I need to tell you, of course, Lewis Goodall will, I'm sure, be getting a government minister. No idea. Can I use the word that Andrew used, the poor sod, who will be wheeled out by the government. But Lewis is on LBC, of course, from 10 in the morning. With all this going on and Trump talking about war, should we have a complete change of tack? Broadcaster and environmental campaigner Chris Packham will join us after this. He saved his dogs' lives, Sid and Nancy, two poodles, by going on a vegan... The dogs, not him. Putting them on a vegan diet. How did that work? You'll find out after this. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, has insisted to LBC Sir Keir Starmer did not mislead Parliament over the appointment of Lord Mandelson as US Ambassador. Last night it emerged that the peer was cleared by the Foreign Office to take the job despite failing a security review. Mr Jones has confirmed to Nick that the top civil servant who made that decision, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Opposition parties are calling on Sir Keir Starmer to resign, but Number 10 says Sir Keir was only made aware of the revelation on Tuesday. President Trump says Iran has agreed to hand over its enriched uranium, one of the key sticking points in talks about ending the war. Tehran is yet to respond to Donald Trump's claim. And three people have been charged over a suspected arson attack at the offices of a Persian media organisation in northwest London. Police say a lit container was thrown at a premises in Wembley on Wednesday night. LBC weather. A band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK. The southeast staying dry. A high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
Our focus in the last few weeks has been on getting the Strait of Hormuz open because all the time it's not open for free navigation. That is impacting our economy and our energy bills. It's my job to protect the British public from that.
Hear every side of the story.
Starmer is going to have to get involved.
America has to get rid of Trump before he continues down this road of leading the world into a global economic crash.
You feel like asking much of a luxury now to eat health.
I'm almost in my 40s and I haven't ever had a break in war in any of these living costs.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair, and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
Need anything from Tesco? Like 2 for £8 on selected Tesco Finest ready meals, such as chicken tikka masala with pilau rice.
Club card accepted.
Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores ends 12th of April 2027. Club card or app required.
My name's Dame Leslie Regan, consultant gynaecologist and chair of the charity Wellbeing of Women. At Wellbeck London, we don't just treat our patients, we design an entire experience. Across every specialty, we select only those colleagues we would send our own families to. The result? A community of exceptional doctors constantly learning from each other, so you will always see the best doctor for you.
Discover more at Wellbeck.com. Wellbeck London. Beyond better healthcare.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Caulfield.
And I'm Jolie Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
While Number 10's handling or characterisation of Number 10's handling of the Mandelson affair could be characterised as one, let's go to a dog's dinner of a different kind. Celebrate the good health of two poodles called Sid and Nancy, but they weren't always healthy. They're owned by Chris Packham, of course, environmentalist and broadcaster, who joins me now. Good to have you on, comrade, and I can see you're holding one of them. Have you got Sid or Nancy in your arms?
This is Nancy. This is Nancy, the naughty Nancy.
Hello, Nancy. Welcome to LBC. Right, let's back up, Chris. How long ago were the dogs... How old are the dogs? How long ago did they get ill, and what was their condition?
Well, there'll be six in May, and like my previous poodles that I'd switched onto a raw meat diet about 20 years ago, they had been living on that since they were pups. We decided to make a transition to a plant-based diet as the science was showing that that was a healthier option, not for just the dogs, but for the planet too, and that it was finally affordable and there was a vet-formulated, fully nutritionally complete diet available on the shelf. So we thought we'd give it a go during Veganuary and see what happened. I mean, ultimately, if the dogs didn't eat it, it wouldn't have worked, but they loved it from the outset. Before we did that, we wanted to make sure they were healthy for any sort of transition, so we got their bloods done. And Sid showed a very high 73% increase in blood fats, bile acids, and we were very concerned about his liver kidney function, so we had him ultrasounded. Thankfully, he was okay, but the vet's advice was you need to get him on a lower fat diet immediately. So 90 days later, after the plant-based transition, we tested him, and yeah, we saw a 73% reduction in his blood fats, 39% improvement in his bile acid, and then the liver stress markers were down by 70%. So it had made a significant difference. Also, he had weepy eyes that disappeared after a couple of weeks. Claws are much stronger. And as I said, you know, critically, they both enjoyed eating the food. So it was something we were very pleased to have tried. We think that, you know, ongoing, had we not done that blood test and had we not been aware that that high fat meat diet was causing him problems, he might have got pancreatitis, and that could have been very serious.
What about their levels of activity? Did they seem friskier, bouncier? How would you describe that, Chris?
Well, the first thing is they showed a greater appetite for the food. I mean, poodles are picky. I mean, they're great dogs in many ways, but they can be, you know, picky over their food, particularly Nancy. Last night I was in the kitchen, you know, I'm getting it out of the tin, she's jumping up at my side, and we never saw that previously. So they showed that sort of appetite. I had to get into sort of gruesome detail of dog owning, but it's part and parcel of what we do. Their stools are much better,
right?
And they look more comfortable when they're defecating.
When you say they're better, they're not as offensive in smell, or they're easier to clear up. What do you mean by better, Chris?
Well, better for the dogs. I mean, I think that, you know, when they were on that raw meat diet, their stools were quite dry, and they were sometimes struggling to pass them. And what I've noticed now is that they defecate much more quickly and more comfortably, and there's good consistency to the stools. And I mean, again, you know, men of our age, we pay attention to our stools because obviously there are conditions that we can make, indeed, you know, judgment about. So some might consider it an unpleasant subject, it is a good way of monitoring conditions. So yes, their stalls have improved. In terms of activity, they're just as, I mean, poodles, you know, they've got too many batteries in, and they always need another 3 hours after the 2 hour walk you've given them. So they're full of energy.
So what does a dog's vegan meal comprise, Chris?
So they get a mix because, again, variety is the spice of their life when it comes to eating. So they have dry food in the morning, and then they have dental chews in the early evening, which have been formulated, obviously, to reduce plaque. They love those. They absolutely go mad for them. And then they have their wet food with topping in the evening. There are supplements that we've given them. There are sort of probiotics. They love eating those. These are treats, so they only have one of those a day. Another for reducing stress and anxiety. And all of these have not been put together in a kitchen. These have been put together, you know, in Omni's lab. Right. And as I say, it's a vet-formulated, nutritionally complete diet. And one of the things we find is that, you know, it's cheaper, definitely, because of a lack of wastage.
Right.
On the raw meat diet, when you defrost it, obviously, it's raw meat. You've only got a limited of time. But you know, if they don't eat it straight away, it can go in the fridge later that day. Following morning, maybe. After that, it's got to go. And the foxes prosper. So, you know, it's been good all round. And I think, you know, in the time of climate breakdown, biodiversity crisis, we should be looking for opportunities to play a positive role in solving the problems rather than continuing to be a part of one. And therefore, as and when it's appropriate to you and maybe your dog, I would suggest it's worth trying for the health of your dog, for the health of your, you know, your wallet and your purse, and the health of the planet.
Before I let you go, I just have to pay tribute. It's obviously done something for her behaviour. She's the most brilliantly behaved dog. I think she's also a bit of a model, isn't she? She's quite a vain dog, I sense, in that she's playing up to the camera brilliantly, this one.
Look, Nancy, you know, she has got an inflated sense of her own importance. There's absolutely not about that. But her behaviour at the moment is exemplary. But if I put her down on the ground, she starts hanging out with Sid. Well, we know what happened in the 70s, don't we?
Chris, you be well. Lots of love to Sid and to Nancy. Long health with their vegan diet. Chris Packham, environmentalist and broadcaster. Nancy in his arms. Sid waiting for Nancy's return, I imagine. Well, it changed the mood a little bit, didn't it? But let's come back to the big story. Peter Mandelson, the affair. He's a survivor, if nothing else. Sir Keir Starmer, does he survive this one? Who's been hanging on? Ali in Horsham. Come on, Ali. What do you take? Where does this story need to go next? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all.
A quick one. Looking from a health point of view, safety point of view, and decision-making, health and safety. Now, if someone is recruited someone with possible links with a paedophile, he wouldn't be let anywhere near any schools, any children in the UK. So So I'm just wondering, with someone, if he's got the responsibility of making the 70 million people safe in the UK, what's the result of his decision-making process?
Well, what, you tell me, well, what do you think is the result of it? What do you take from it?
It's an absolute mess. Either he was aware of it, which, in which case he's lying, or he wasn't aware of it, which is irresponsible. It's either one or the other. So you can't get away with this.
How surprised are you, and I do, again, speaking to Jones, I am staggered that he will allow this to go all over today, all over Saturday, all over Sunday, and, of course, Monday's papers and Monday's early bulletins. Ali?
I'm shocked, especially from a, say, I work in the health profession, and I work with families and children, and I think someone who's got links with paedophile and has been given a top job, and the Prime Minister says, well, I didn't know. I mean, how many people do you let to work in the schools, anywhere near the schools, if they've got issues, they've got potential paedophile links?
Ali, thank you. Need to tell you, of course, Peter Mandelson has maintained and professes innocence and denies a series of allegations against him. Just need to get that out legally. Thank you for that, Ali. Michael in Acton. Michael, where
do
you
want to go? Hi, good morning, Nick.
This?
Thank you for having me on the show again. Excellent.
Hello,
as always.
No, thank you.
Yeah, basically, I'm on the same side as your last call. I personally, I don't understand how Keir Starmer, David Lammy, and that guy Darren Jones who you spoke with earlier could possibly not have known this finding. It's too important. They know how damaged that Mandelson was from before. And basically, he's been sacked from multiple administrations. They knew he was part of he's very closely affiliated with Jeffrey Epstein. And yet they went and go ahead. And also, remember, to me, Mandelson was the architect of Starmer's rapid rise to power. It's an incredibly fast rise to power. Plus, Mandelson was Starmer's key guy in New York for trying to get this...
Well, this was... So this is seen, and I was funny enough, you've come to the next area I want to take you to on this. The idea was that we are dealing with an unconventional president and unconventional times with President Trump. So, in a sense, you go for a pretty unconventional appointment. You don't go as you would normally, perhaps, for a career diplomat. You go to someone who has extraordinary skills, I would suggest, in being able to get to people and get deals done. That was the risk that was obviously they decided was worth taking, and it's blown up in their face, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more like Starmer put Mandelson in there as a reward for getting into power, but it's more about Diego Garcia. Mandelson was lobbying for the Diego Garcia deal, which, Starmer and Hermer have been promoting since 2013 when they went out.
Lastly, the amount of pressure being applied to Mandelson is akin to Boris Johnson. And is it the same level? Some people are saying all Boris Johnson did was have a glass of Prosecco and a birthday cake. Others say, no, that spoke to a pattern of deception and a pattern of lies, and there were the parties and everything else. Who is the greater offender, the bigger offender in your eyes, Johnson or potentially Starmer over the Mandelson affair?
Starmer, without a doubt. Boris was sacked from three jobs for lying. You know, here, Starmer doesn't know anything. Everything never came across my desk. I wasn't made aware of it. It's inconceivable that you could not be... It's such an important appointment to be this ambassador in Washington. And, you know, he always claims that he doesn't know. But he did make the appointment. And, you know, they've got it very, very, very badly wrong. And all three of those people have to resign.
Michael, thank you. You say they should all go. Let's bring into that aspect now to the conversation. Many people saying all it was for Boris Johnson was a glass of Prosecco and a piece of birthday cake. It wasn't. You also look to the PPE, the failed PPE scandal. You look to the policy of moving people into care homes. You look to other policies as well. You look to perhaps him not being really at the wheel when it all started. But for some, this is a far greater series of offences. And allowing someone, and remember we heard how the DV system works, by the way, you hear that a lot, that means developed vetting, it's enhanced, or developed vetting, would have meant that extra safeguards should have been put in place as regards our ambassador in Washington. So which is the greater offence there? And this other aspect, and I say again, to allow two, if not three more days of speculation, unless there is something they're seeking to find. And finally, the suggestion that a distinguished, whether you like him and agree with him or not, a cabinet mandarin who'd served for four prime ministers in very senior roles suddenly has, what, a rush of blood to the head and decides to destroy his reputational career with his clearance advice? It's a strange one, isn't it? So much to discuss. We'll come back to it after the 9:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has told LBC it's astonishing and unacceptable that Peter Mandelson's vetting process was overruled by the Foreign Office. It's after the peer was cleared to take up the role of US Ambassador despite failing a security report. Darren Jones has told Nick this morning that the top civil servant who made that decision, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. LBC weather, a band of rain will spread eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise to junction 22 at London Coney. It's because of an accident where one lane's closed. In Walthamstow, Markhouse Roads had to be closed both ways, and that's because a car has broken down. In Norbury, it's busy on the A23 London Road in both directions following an accident. LNER trains are delayed by about an hour to and from King's Cross. It was after an investigation from earlier. Southwestern Railway are delayed eastbound between Woking and Surbiton. And Thames Link services are delayed by about 20 minutes between St Pancras and Luton, and also between St Pancras and Sutton. And on the Underground, the delays on the Victoria line have just cleared.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Well, those of us who wanted politics to be a bit boring for a while are not going to get their way, are we? But this is deadly serious and quite possibly career-ending.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BitVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Rednap. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. GambleAware.org.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids. Cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both Captain Hats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thames Link Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries. See you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car. Now in their 20th year, they're on average 11 minutes away. So help is never far. If only they could make finding a good driving song simpler. No. No. Oh, definitely not. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Back to your calls on this, Turan, you will be the next caller. Let's just feature some of the texts, the social media posts that are coming in. Lynn says the left are gunning for Starmer to go, and then what? A far-left PM would be a disaster when Europe needs consolidating and larger powers are warring. I totally understand why Starmer chose Mandelson for US at a time when previous governments could not get a US deal with the UK, and a time we needed a deal desperately after Brexit. None of the others are in any way prime ministerial and would be an embarrassment to the United Kingdom. John says, Ollie Robbins is a sacrificial lamb. Keir Starmer needs to resign. His future is sealed. There's no avoiding the inevitable. And lastly, before I come back to your call, Sarah says, Clearly, if he's deliberately misled Parliament, he resigns. However, it's ridiculous to say he should resign if he was told the correct process was followed, and that is what he said, then he hasn't misled the House. Some opportunist MPs are saying the PM should have asked more questions, but what questions would he have asked if he didn't know the head Foreign Office, I think you mean the head of the Foreign Office, was able to overrule security vetting decisions? The PM cannot spend all his time asking about things he may or may not know. He wouldn't have time to do anything else. All I would say before, Turan, I come to you, Sarah, as someone who's just texted that over. Remember when Kemi Badenoch asked him whether he knew of Peter Mandelson's links to Epstein? And in the House of Commons, he said, yes, I did. I would have thought, Sarah, that would start alarm bells ringing. So you would want to know the ins and outs, every millimetre, every fraction of an inch of every piece of paper and everything that's gone on. To the point that I would actually, personally, have probably had the people who did the DV develop vetting in front of me. And remember, the unit that does the DV, develop vetting for the SV, for the security vetting, that is a cabinet department. So you're, I think, stretching credulity to beyond breaking point when you say no minister was aware. No minister was aware that Mandelson had failed the clearance. Indeed, I remind you, the Prime Minister said in Hastings in February, the day after that question from Kemi Badenoch, that he, Mandelson, had passed clearance. Now, again, to your point, if that's what he was told, fair enough, but as I often say about this Prime Minister, he's supposedly a forensically skilled barrister. Well, if you appear in court against a barrister, you'll often find that he or she is going to try and find out that you're not telling the truth. But this man just accepts everything he's given? Turan in Cockfosters. Turan, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick and the team. A lot of your contributors have already made some very sensible comments.
I know, it's been a tremendous conversation, hasn't it?
They summed it up very well. And, in fact, this is the second time only that I'm speaking to you in person.
Oh, right.
Although it's, I'm a long-term listener.
Oh, thank you so much.
It beggars belief. It's just, we all seen and understand this is not a conceivable situation, would not stack up in any other industry. What it looks like to the people of the UK, let alone to the international stage,
yep.
God only knows.
Yep.
And I'm waiting for that little quip to come out from Trump very soon as to, where this has all left, particularly as Starmer has not done what he's wanted to do in recent times.
Oh, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Trump joins in. Yeah, that could
add he'll be adding to the bandwagon.
Yeah.
An extra level. But, look, where are we with all of this? Emily Thornberry made some good comments. It's a farcical situation that they could be asked to make an inquiry, and somehow there's been some swerve of credibility of the assessment and the investigation inquiries. My personal view is, I gather a lot more intelligence when I'm off the radio, by the way, because when you're on the radio...
No, you're doing fine. Don't together. Be ridiculous. No, go on,
What I personally feel is, given the previous history with Mandelson, Foreign Office, his credibility on the foreign and the world stage, Starmer put some directive somewhere to say, get this man in, don't tell me everything that is required. I want him to get past, I don't need to know all the details. Something like that has either had to happen or possibly this Mandelson's got a direct link in the security.
Or, Turan, can I put it to you, a lot of this could be resolved or explained if only we could find Morgan McSweeney's mobile phone.
Absolutely. Absolutely agreed. I 100% agree on that.
And I wonder how long it'll be before Sir Ollie Robbins' phone suddenly gets nicked.
Well, I'm just wondering, is there a direct link between those parties and therefore Starmer's been conveniently left out of the equation? I mean, the only reason I can see anybody standing firmly foot if he's got some credibility or innocence, because you would have thought he would have held up given some good reasons, but there's no good reason so far. So is he innocent, but deliberately made so? Who knows?
Turan, great hearing from you for a second time. Look forward to a third conversation. Have a good weekend. Alison's in Hassocks. Alison, your take on this. Good morning.
Oh, yeah, hello.
Hello, Alison.
I just wanted to say that I think this country has more important issues to get through, and I feel that Keir Starmer is the only politician to actually get us through this Iran crisis. And yes, he might have done a few things wrong at the beginning of his premiership, but I think he's a man with integrity. And who else is going to get us through this awful crisis that we're going through? He's done such a good job.
Can I just ask, what if he lied? I know there is an if there. What if he lied about Mandelson?
I don't think he did lie.
There is a school of thought that he did, and I think it's a justifiable school of thought. So I ask again, what if he has lied? Does that, because of the gravity of the situation in which the world finds itself, does that not matter? I'm asking.
I'd have to think about that one.
Okay.
But I just think that if he has lied, he has to apologise.
Yes.
But there isn't anybody else that I think at this time could get us through what we're going through. And this country just needs stability. We don't need another prime minister.
Do you not think, lastly, you say, and indeed we do need to get through what we're going through, but if we compare ourselves with other countries where VAT has been frozen on petrol, or indeed duty has been frozen on petrol, and we have petrol and diesel going through the roof, I haven't even touched on heating oil, I don't see a lot of help for the ordinary man or woman, Alison.
Well, I'm sure that will come. Some other crises. Because I just am sure. I mean, he's got so many problems that he has to sort out.
But why wait?
Coming to premiership with so many problems.
What's the value in waiting? And more people can't afford to fill up their cars. I don't see why you would wait on something as drastic or dramatic as that. Where's the currency in waiting?
Well, we'll just have to wait and see what they're going to do.
All right, Alison, thank you. It's an alternative view. Who knows who's right and who's wrong? At the moment, I think there is a school of thought that possibly he might have misled us. Alison, thank you, intentionally or otherwise. Joe in Tooting. Joe, your take? There's Alison calling for a little more peace, clemency, I suppose, as it were, for Sakir. Would you agree with her?
Not at all, Nick. Unfortunately, the one question... Morning, by the way.
Morning sir.
One thing that nobody's asked yet, and this just needs to be given, is if you're so assured that he passed his vetting, just show us the evidence, just show us the email from the office.
They won't, will they?
Just show us. No, it doesn't exist, because he's going to turn around and he was told. Well, he gets told something, Nick, in this day and age, without a piece of paper coming around to confirm it. Everybody gets that. And if he can't provide that, then he should go, because he's a liar. And that's it, plain and simple. If you can't provide the evidence to show that you're backing up your telling the truth, then you may as well just go.
Joe, thank you. You go and have a good weekend. Thank you. Allow Jan in Hammersmith to come up. Jan, your take on this. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. A couple of points. One, no disrespect to yourself, but if it's got a Labour labourer, you absolutely will trounce them. It's your MO, okay? Well, secondly, Starmer, okay, there's been these little bits, and believe me, I'm not conspiracy theorist, of almost like sabotage. It's very, very strange. You know, this man, this head of Foreign Office, this civil servant.
So Ollie Robbins,
Yeah, top of his game. Keir Starmer's quite a new PM. He absolutely should have been banging the desk and saying, no, 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 this man. He was cleared by the Foreign Office, for goodness sake. Keir Starmer can't sit in each department every day.
When you say he was cleared, of course, it needs to say that that's where the story has changed, of course, so dramatically, and which has led us to where we are. Jan, I have to finish. I know you've more to say, and apologies to many more, but I know my colleagues are going to be taking this story on, and I sense we'll be still talking about it on Monday. But that's it for today. You can listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for me for the week. James Overeyes, the other side of the news on LBC. I will be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. But what conversation will we be having on Monday? Will we be writing the epitaphs for Keir Starmer's premiership? I've been introduced to a relatively new word this morning, and that word is Starmtrooper. A significant cohort of people, I guess inevitably more active online than probably in the queue for your bus this morning, who will admit no wrong on the case of the current Prime Minister. I'm afraid they are on an incredibly sticky wicket this morning, because this is almost unbelievably bad. Objectively speaking, scarves off, loyalties aside. You did a double take, right, when you saw the first headline that said he failed, Mandelson failed a security vetting process and got sent to Washington anyway.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's Chief Secretary, Darren Jones, says the Prime Minister won't resign over the Lord Mandelson vetting row. It's emerged the peer was cleared by the Foreign Office to become US Ambassador, despite failing a security review. Number 10 says Sir Keir was only made aware of the revelation on Tuesday and is furious about it. Darren Jones was asked by LBC's Nick Ferrari earlier why it took so long for Sir Keir and Downing Street to react.
The information had not yet been fully assembled for him to be able to go to the House of Commons to make that statement. As you know, he's going to be giving a statement to the House of Commons on Monday.
Why Monday? A matter of this gravity?
Purely because Parliament is not sitting today because it's Friday, Nick. If the House was sitting today, the Prime Minister would be there this morning.
Well, surely he could make a statement from Number 10 or somewhere else.
I think it's important in these circumstances for the Prime Minister to make an address to the House of Commons.
The top civil servant at the Foreign Office, Sir Ollie Robbins, has now left his post. Opposition parties are calling for the Prime Minister to resign. Liberal Democrat leader Sir Ed Davey has told LBC the buck has to stop with Sir Keir Starmer.
I don't think you can get out of this by sacking Ollie Robbins, but it does seem inconceivable that a senior civil servant like Ollie Robbins, who'd only just been appointed to this job, you know, just a few weeks earlier, that he would take such a decision without referring it to ministers.
Stay with LBC for the very latest. In other news this morning, the UK and France are to chair a meeting in Paris to discuss the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions are expected to focus on how the key waterway can be kept open after the Iran war ends. The US, Iran and Israel won't be involved in discussions. Three people have been charged over a suspected arson attack on a Persian media organisation in northwest London. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott has more details.
21-year-old Ashin McGuinness, 19-year-old Nathan Dunn and a 16-year-old boy, who are all British nationals, have been charged with arson with intent to endanger life. Officers say a lit container was thrown at a Persian media organisation on Wednesday evening. The fire put itself out and no injuries were reported.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 19 points at 10,570. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 14. LBC weather, a band of rain spreading eastwards across much of the UK, the southeast staying dry, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? Well, you know what?
A chip. And a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. I mean, crikey, we ran through some of the greatest hits yesterday, didn't it, when it comes to my well-worn and over-rehearsed anecdotes that I like to use to sometimes highlight rather bigger pictures. What do we go with for today? My old geography teacher or Donald Rumsfeld? Donald Rumsfeld's famous litany, of course, of, I always forget precisely what it was, the known knowns, the known unknowns, the unknown unknowns, and the unknown knowns. And my old geography teacher, who was not, shall we say, the most knowledgeable exponent of geographic arts, who used to respond to questions that he couldn't answer by telling us, don't know, nobody knows, don't need to know, it's not in the curriculum. And there is an awful lot that we don't know about the extraordinary, the close to unprecedented revelation reported by the Guardian newspaper yesterday that Peter Mandelson, prior to being sent to Washington DC as the ambassador to the court of Donald Trump, but it would appear after it was announced that he was being appointed to that role, failed a or the vetting process, well, the vetting process, his security clearance. Pause for a moment just to reflect, and forgive me for this, but on the journalistic, I'd be just scoop of the year, this, isn't it? It's going to take some beating. The Guardian absolutely smacking it out of the park. When you think about the effort that some of their rivals on the right of British politics are putting in to pin anything on the current government, and particularly the current Prime Minister, trying to demonise a donkey sanctuary at one point, then this, by The Guardian, is absolutely extraordinary and brilliant journalism. A massive, massive scoop and a potentially premiership-ending revelation. He was, the decision was overruled by the Foreign Office so that he could take up his role as ambassador to the US. We have a book to be written, don't we, about the damage sustained by the entire Labour Party over a period of about 30 years, if not more, as a direct consequence of trying to find plum jobs for Peter Mandelson. How much damage? Can anyone count it? Is it measurable? The amount of damage sustained by the Labour Party as an absolutely direct consequence of putting Peter Mandelson into plum jobs. Now, there's an argument to be made that the good outweighs the bad, and for a long time it did, but I suspect if we could somehow see those scales, then all of the dark arts of spin and the brilliance, alleged brilliance at communication and media manipulation is probably now, if you were to cite those as positives, they are now rather massively outweighed by the negatives that appointing him to these jobs create. This is absolutely insane, this story. Make no bones about it. The problem I have, and I'm going to level with you briefly, because obviously this is not in any way, shape or form about me, but when you've spent much of the last two decades chronicling the appalling amorality and incompetence of right-wing politicians and calling out the utter hypocrisy of so-called journalists who wear their biases on their sleeve so blatantly and unashamedly that, frankly, you don't know whether they can even lie straight in bed, then on mornings like this, and this will sound odd, actually, I worry sometimes that I might swing too far the other way in order to prove that I'm not a hypocrite like they are. So if, for example, today you think that it's still appropriate to suggest, to lie through your teeth that Boris Johnson lost his job for eating cake, then in order to prove that you're in an entirely different universe to that sort of morally bankrupt liar, then you might end up swinging too far the other way. And I'm just putting that out there because these are the things that I ponder and pontificate before I come on air. But I'm not at the moment worried that I'm overreacting to this story because, well, on a personal level, it was almost the only thing left in Keir Starmer's locker that you thought you could rely on. His commitment to and observance of process. I mean, this may be unfair, but some of the balls that he has dropped can be picked up again. But the two things that I felt he was almost untouchable on would have been commitment to process and international law. He has played an absolute blinder with regard to Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's hideous adventures in the Middle East. I mean, a truly extraordinary display of probity and integrity in the face of extraordinary abuse and criticism, up to and including the President of the United States of America. He has held a steady course and got every big decision right. And so that stays in his locker. Commitment to international law, commitment to the national interest. But commitment to process? The idea where